Here we go.
Who the fuck is that guy?
Hello.
My
name
is Juan. My name
is Juan. My name is Donata.
So the usual.
Si.
Muy bueno. Bienvenidos. MMA y stuff.
Me amo Miguel.
Soy Mateo de Cape Cod.
Maricon.
Ooh, how dare you? How could you?
I wonder how long I could go with just speaking the language of the poor.
Yeah, it's not easy. My brother would not be pleased with that intro. Welcome to MMA and Stuff on halfguarded.com. Also available on iTunes, Google Play. My name is Matt. That is Miguel Coughlin. And we're going to talk about MMA and stuff this week. I was thinking we'd just get right into it here, if that works for you, sir.
No.
No. You want to drag this out a little bit?
Yeah.
All right. This past weekend on Friday night, October 6th.
How's dog?
Wife is great. Dog is the same. Awful. Kids are good. The people who matter, my mom's good. Yeah, everybody's good. The people who matter in my life are doing well. Thank you for checking. The dog I could do without. What's that?
How's school going?
Okay. My son had a couple days where it was he was a little upset, but he's getting into a groove now and a routine, so he's used to it. My daughter is fine. I mean, it's fourth grade. She's used to that drill now.
I can't keep this up. I can't just keep asking dumbass inane questions just to drag this out longer.
I'd keep going.
I know, but you broke me. Just listening to that, I'm like, oh, I don't really care.
Yeah. I'm probably the only, well, my wife and I are probably the only people who really care.
I mean, I care in a broad sense.
You know what else no one cares about? Bellator 184. It was held on October 6th. It was Friday night at the Winstar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma.
Thackerville.
Any guess on the attendance for this show?
4,312. 1,247. I mean, there's a lot of high school graduations that have more people than that.
The total gate was $108,000. I feel like Ring of Honor's probably done a gate that big.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, who's paying for this shit? Like, who's really buying a ticket to Bellator?
Well, it would only be $10 a head, right? Attendance was 1,200 and the gate was...
Yeah.
No, that's 100 a head. Because that would be 12,000. $100 a head? Doesn't make sense. Anyway, not a well-attended show. In the main event, Darian Caldwell defeated Eduardo Dantes by unanimous decision 48-47, 48-47, 50-45. Did you see much of that fight?
No. I mean, I watched it, but I have zero recollection of it.
It was a world championship title change. Caldwell won the bantamweight title.
UFC titles don't mean anything these days. You think I'm going to give a fuck about a Bellator belt?
Like I don't.
Fifth major, he's the fifth major bantamweight titleist out there.
He basically just out-wrestled Dantes and took him down and won the fight that way, in my estimation.
That's what I remember.
Prior to that, your buddy Manny Sanchez defeated Daniel Strauss with a triangle choke at a minute 56 in the third.
Yeah,
good fight.
Yeah, man, he looked very competent and like he's ready to be at that Bellator level, but I mean, UFC level, we'll see. Like I guess the UFC level nowadays, yeah. I'm thinking like title picture, like no, not right now.
Gotcha. Prior to that, Pat Curran returned after about almost 2 years off, at least a year and a half off, to defeat John Teixeira. A unanimous decision. Curran's a featherweight. Manny Sanchez is a featherweight. That might be a direction to go with them both on this card together. That would make sense on paper.
Sure. I don't even know who they're... Is it a pit bull? Is that it, their champion?
Probably.
Is it a black guy?
Let's see. Bellator champions. Oh, God, I have so many windows open.
I could probably just do this quicker.
No, I got it. List of Bellator MMA champions. Let's see. This is always a fun game.
Who do they have? They don't have a heavyweight champion.
The current heavyweight champion's name is Vacant.
Yeah.
It's like Madonna.
In theory, it's still Volkov.
Patricio Ferrer. Yeah,
okay, Pitbull. Yeah, it was a Pitbull. Nice.
I thought they... Huh. Okay. So it's Bader at light heavyweight, Carvalho at middleweight, Douglas Lima welterweight, Brent Primus lightweight champ.
That's right, the great victory he had back in June.
And then we've got one of the pit bulls, I don't know the difference, featherweight champ, and Caldwell as the new bantamweight champ. And no heavyweight champ.
It can't be they have a middleweight champion.
You can't believe that?
Yeah. I don't know, I have no idea who these people are.
I like that they had a strawweight champion at 115 pounds, Zoila Gurgel.
Oh, yeah, that was a while ago.
Yeah, and I don't think she ever defended the belt, and then she went to Invicta. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Julia Budd is their featherweight champ.
She beat Marlos Kunin, I remember that.
Yeah, she's held the belt for 208 days.
She's got a title fight coming up.
Does she?
Yeah, I saw a picture.
Well, that's Bellator for you. They do not have a show this weekend, so...
No one does.
No one does. Except the jiu-jitsu chick there. She's fighting again.
Okay, nobody has a real show. Mackenzie Dern?
Yes, thank you. Really? Yeah, yeah. 125 she's fighting at, actually.
I guess, you know, she's keeping pretty active.
Well, she keeps doing jiu-jitsu tournaments and stuff, so it's
Yeah, but
weird.
She's still fighting. She's fighting more than I thought she would.
Well, I'm thinking if she wins this fight, she's in the UFC, if I had to guess, but...
She could fight Pete Van Zandt.
Yes.
And they can diet together.
Well, they don't need to anymore. They're both fighting at 125.
But we don't want them to look too fat. I mean,
yeah,
if they get fat, what good are they as women?
I still think, like, heavyweight women fighting would be awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
It would be so good.
Like, actual, like 250-pound women?
I don't know where that weight class would be. But, no, there's not a lot of 250-pound women.
I don't think that there's a 250-pound woman on the planet that's healthy.
There's only one woman in the 145-pound division in the UFC.
And she's not healthy either. Yeah, that's true.
It was a half joke, but I always like, you know, your Cabbage Correas.
You want to see some Gabby Garcias? Guys.
Yeah, but I picture, like, out of shape women for some reason.
So you're thinking Gabby Garcia's opponent?
Like the big black one
that fought her from TNA? The one that dropped her and almost beat her?
Who's God.
I want to call her Mama June, and that ain't right.
I'm trying to think of, like, fat heavyweight men fighters.
Bastion Booger?
Like Sean Jordan. Guys like that.
Oh, okay.
I want a women's division of that.
I see. Yeah, nobody in the world fucking wants that at all. The last thing I need to see gigantic, fat, flabby women in very little clothing. Like, holy shit. There's nobody in the world. Even feminists don't want to see that. They think it's exploitative or something. Chubby chasers would be like, I like the feel of it in the dark. I don't want to see it.
Gotta change it up. Then on Saturday, October 7th at the T-Mobile Arena in Paradise, Nevada, we had UFC 216, Ferguson versus Lee. Attendance was 10,638 with a total gate of $677,000.
Fuck.
Which isn't good.
That's gotta be the lowest pay-per-view gate in Vegas and forever.
Yeah, that's not good. Originally,
how do you have 10 times the people in attendance of Bellator but only 6 times the revenue?
I don't know.
Economies of scale. I don't know what that means, really.
Walk in, I mean comps? I don't know. They papered it? Yeah, I have
sure,
no idea.
Sure.
Originally, the show, nobody really talks about it, was supposed to be headlined by Stipe versus Kane, but that fight never happened. I don't remember why, if Kane got hurt or Stipe had contract issues.
I'm
going to
guess Kane got hurt.
Yeah, probably, but I'm surprised they didn't find somebody else for Stipe to fight. But that was the original targeted bell for this show. It ended up being Lee versus Ferguson, and Tony Ferguson beat Lee by submission, a triangle choke at 4:02 of the third round. So Tony Ferguson is the new interim lightweight champion of the world. The real world's title that Ric Flair used to hold is now held by Conor McGregor. So you would presume the next fight for McGregor would be Ferguson, but there's talk of Nate Diaz next. Obviously, this was the biggest win of Ferguson's career. He called out Conor at the end of the fight. What did you think of Ferguson's performance, and do you think he'll get Conor next?
Before I answer the real questions, while this is obviously his big, like, probably his most high-profile or important victory, I still think, like, the Dos Anjos fight is a far bigger, like, victory on paper than this. Because Kevin Lee is good, but, you know, Dos Anjos is a former world champion. Nonetheless, the point is still taken. I don't know, it was just stuck in my head. I thought Ferguson looked, I don't think he looked as good as I thought he would. He got hurt a little bit on the feet. He got out-wrestled way too easy. And
he was mounted.
Yeah, he got mounted, and like he was close to getting hurt. You know, like, I don't want to say finish, but look, he got mounted, and he didn't escape it right away. That's close to being finished. It got the triangle. It was a great triangle off of a great armbar attempt, but again, I think he's looked better against better fighters. Yeah.
Did you feel like Lee kind of gave him that triangle? Like Lee wanted out?
Maybe.
Because you don't. And maybe my memory is just bad, but I feel like, you know, your top four or five guys in most divisions now aren't getting subbed by triangles from the guard like that anymore.
I thought it was very odd as well. When I saw it happen, it just felt. Yeah, it felt odd.
And it was, like, on the wrong side. It was weird, right?
Well,
Wasn't it?
First he went for the armbar, and it was a really, really slick armbar. And we see enough guys win with armbars. It's not too bad. But he transitioned to the triangle. And he had the instep incorrectly locked, which it's one of those things that, you know, everybody will talk about it, and all the announcers say it because it makes you sound really smart. But I think it's just a lot of guys do it just to lock up the shoulder initially, and then they transition and lock it up correctly. So it's not really like, I don't think these high-level fighters are all morons. No, don't do that. No, it's just a transition technique. But, yeah, I mean, unless you're Verdum, I'm trying to, you know, we've had Verdum. It seems to be if you're at the highest level, you tend to get it. If you're Anderson Silva or Verdum. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, Damian Maia's had a couple, I guess, but yeah.
But I mean, even Anderson was against Chael. Like, I don't put, no offense to Chael, but he gets subbed sometimes, you know?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's kind of embarrassing it didn't happen earlier. I mean, if you had told me Chael Sonnen was in Anderson Silva's guard for five rounds, I would have said, some fucking liar. By the way, Everybody, we're going back in time. Just review fights from way back when, because this pay-per-view had a boring main event.
You thought the main event was boring?
I didn't think it was boring. I should say it was just kind of, oh, that's a main event?
Yeah.
Like, I just watched two guys, neither of whom anybody would... I mean, you can argue Ferguson is number one, but, I mean... Oh, yeah, you paid money to see, number two or three in the world fight number seven or eight in the world? Okay. Yippee.
Do you think, Ferguson calling out McNugget at the end is enough to get Conor interested? Because, I mean, everybody's saying at this point Conor can kind of call his own shots. If he wants Nate next, he can have Nate. And if he wants Ferguson, he can have Ferguson. And I'm not saying that's right or I'm arguing for or against that. It just kind of seems the way it is. He's got some serious pull based on his ability to sell tickets and pay-per-views. So do you think Ferguson did enough to maybe whet Connor's appetite a little bit?
I don't think he hurt his chances. If it, by showing a willingness to try it and to talk a little bit, I believe that if you're Connor, you'd go, okay, you know, this guy at least wants to try to do business. It's so weird to talk about Connor this way, but it's true. Kevin Lee would have been far better. But, you know, with the title on the line and the and Ferguson's just incredible win streak, it's a credible main event for Connor to fight. I mean, honestly, he's going to fight Dos Anjos. This would be a bigger fight than Dos Anjos. And when he first fought Nate, you know, going into that fight before they had talked, I don't think a lot of people would thought that Nate was a significantly bigger star then than Ferguson is now. Like, he was a bigger star, but, you know, he wasn't like he's, you know, Jose Aldo in the sense of, oh, this guy's been on top for a long time. It's a Diaz. Like, they're like Bigfoot. They kind of exist, and then they fade away, and they come back for some trash. Because that's what Bigfoot eats, trash. So, yeah, I don't know what Connor does, though. I hope he just says, fuck you, Hank Khabib or something. Although, I think that the reason we haven't heard anything, and I suspect that if I'm Connor, I'm going to wait a month. Because if George St. Pierre was to beat Michael Bisping, I would say, fuck it, I want St. Pierre. I'm going to be the first guy to ever win three titles in three divisions. And if you think about it, the way St. Pierre matches up, you know, if you're ever going to have a chance to win the middleweight championship, St. Pierre's the only guy Connor could ever take it from. It's an older guy, and it's a gigantic match anyways. I mean, if you're McGregor, another title fight with George St. Pierre, holy shit. That should be 2 million buys easy. So if I'm him, just wait a month.
Yeah, that's true. And what that would be so ridiculous. I can't wait for the weigh-ins for, like, St. Pierre to weigh in at 185 and Connor to weigh in at, like, 171. That'll be good.
Oh, God, they'll both be just up there in jeans, just looking around, eating steaks, just going, ah, you know what? I've been kind of constipated for a couple of days here. I'm a little bloated, and they step on the scale, and they still got weight to go.
It would be good, like, if GSP came up with, like, a bottle of his red wine, and Connor's coming up with whiskey. They're just drinking on the scale. That would be rather amusing.
I'd pay to watch that.
As would I.
Actually, I wouldn't pay to watch Conor McGregor drink whiskey, but
I might. I'm a big fan. So prior to the fight, Kevin Lee had trouble making weight. He actually had to weigh in a second time because he came in a pound over. He came in at 156, went and I guess, you know, puked and took a dump and sweat some more and was able to make it at 154.5. So there was a lot of concern that he was really drawn and not in the best, you know, shape for the fight itself. Then in his post-fight interview, Joe Rogan asked Lee about, like, a mark on his chest, and Lee said that he had a staph infection. So he was allowed to fight with a staph infection, severely dehydrated. Do you think, like, the commission is liable here? Are they at fault for not catching this or not doing anything about it?
It's
like, what's the point of the commission?
Well, the point of the commission is simply to take money. I mean, I know it's
theoretically.
Really, I mean, what they do now, Nevada has proven itself to be such a joke. As far as what happened there, like when he weighed in, I don't know if he had did he have a mark on his chest when he weighed in?
He did, yeah. Okay. I went back and looked. Yeah, it's like clearly visible. It looks just like a bruise. It looks like you just got hit.
I can't, there's no way that a doctor would miss that. Like, you just, like, I've seen them do the pre-fight checks on fighters, and it's not usually very extensive, but it's kind of, you can, at least they kind of go through and touch it. I mean, fuck, we fucking watch the referees check them for weapons. Why don't they check them for staff? It's right, you didn't get to check, you just look at it and go, oh, what the fuck is that? So, the only way I can see it having happened is, and this is a stretch, they would have to tell Tony, hey, he's got staff. Will you still fight him? And the only reason it would work with this fight is because they're the last fight of the night, there's no chance that they can infect anyone else. So if they were like the first fight, you wouldn't allow them to do it because they'd fuck up the mat. But since they're the last one, nobody else is going to get it besides one of those two guys because the referee's got gloves on and stuff, and gloves stop everything. So maybe that's what they did. Otherwise, yeah, commissions are I don't even know. Like, they let a man with staph infection weigh in a bunch of times, and then they said, go out there and fight. Go for it.
Yeah, it looks pretty negligent to me. Considering all that, I thought, Lee did pretty well, considering his weight-cutting issues, the staff. And it, people, I think, forget this, but he's only 25. To me, he kind of showed a lot here. He almost, if things had gone a little differently when he had Mount in the first, like, he already looked tired in the second to me. Like, I feel like he did everything he could in the first. He didn't get it, and he knew he was done. But healthy, 100% Kevin Lee, I wouldn't have an issue with picking him to beat Ferguson every once in a while, which means he's right in the mix as one of the top three or four guys in the division. To me, he kind of proved something even in the loss.
Yeah, no, I thought he looked very good. Again, I said earlier, like, I didn't really think Ferguson looked all that good, and part of that's also that Lee looked good for a while there. I'd like to see him fight Khabib. I think that'd be really interesting to see how their wrestling handles one another. Otherwise, yeah.
He's called out Khabib, too.
There you go. Then he can fight Khabib. And trust me, if there's anybody you can... Actually, I don't know how you'd work with staff fighting in Russia. Like, obviously, they'd let you do it. I'm just trying to figure out what the penalties would be. Like, maybe they'd poke you before you fought or something. I don't know. It's Russia. It'd be interesting.
In the co-main event, Demetrius Johnson successfully defended his flyweight championship, defeating Ray Borg at 3:15 in the fifth round with a armbar that is one of the crazier submissions you'll ever see. It's being dubbed the Mousetrap. Essentially, Johnson was behind Borg, kind of threw him up in the air. It wasn't really like a suplex, but he kind of just tossed him up in the air.
It's the way that you see, it's an amateur wrestling, when you just see the guy kind of pick him up and bring him down. Where, you know, in amateur wrestling, you can't throw him down in certain ways. You just got to kind of bring him down. Like, every pro wrestling match in history has started that way.
Ben Askren called it like a chin cup or something. But anyway, he kind of tossed him up, and on their way down, he caught Ray Borg's, it would have probably been his right arm, I think it was his right arm. Either way, it doesn't really matter. And caught him in an arm bar and just cranked it back against the cage and got the submission win. Throughout the fight, Johnson kind of just dominated everywhere, whether it was standing or on the ground. There was times where Borg had like a ray of hope. At one moment, he had Johnson's back.
It looked like a full Nelson slam. I kept thinking it was like the Patriot had a submission hold. That's what it would have been.
Yeah. But a huge win for Johnson. He sets the title defense record. A lot of people are calling him the greatest of all time now. People seem to be on board with that. Thoughts on Johnson and the record win?
It's unlike anything I've ever seen now that it's happened. The finish was just unreal. His performance throughout the fight was embarrassing. I think I pretty sure I messaged you like during the fight, and there's someone like, this is a black belt in there with a white belt type of deal. Like, this wasn't a competitive fight. It was almost like this shouldn't have been allowed to be made. And so Ray Borg's number four in the world. He's only got like one or two losses, something like that. Like, he's not a bad fighter, but
right.
Mighty Mouse was, I mean, and unlike Anderson, I think this is what sets him apart from Anderson's record. Anderson set his record and did all these great things, and he's still got, you know, the 14 or 15 wins in a row, which is just incredible. And he went up and down into these things. But when he was, you know, when he had his 10th and 11th title defenses, you knew that his career was close to over. Like, nobody watched him in that second fight with Chael and thought, oh, Anderson's got another 10 years to go. Whereas with Mighty Mouse, holy fuck, she gets, what, 5 years minimum, where I'm just... If every single fight he just went out and did this, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, this guy's going to set records we can't even dream of it at this pace. You know, he didn't get caught up. This could have been a trap. You know, once you get to a certain level, you're so damn good, you can easily just fall into the trap of just, oh, this guy isn't my level. But no, DJ just went out there and fucked him. I mean, it was scary good. And fuck the UFC. Fuck them. You know, I hope they deserve to lose money. WME, I hope you don't recoup your investment, because you can argue the top two fights, which one might have drawn better, But goddamn, fuck you guys. That should have been the last thing on the show. Can you imagine if the pay-per-view would close with the greatest submission in title fight history as a man sets the greatest record in MMA history? Holy shit. And instead, we got to see Kevin Lee get really tired.
Yeah. No, there's definitely something to that, because anything revolving around Conor McGregor at this point is going to take precedent, just the way the news and the media work. So it's like, oh, will Ferguson get Conor next? That was the big story I felt coming out of this show, as opposed to this guy dominating, setting a title defense record with the greatest submission of all time. It was portrayed as secondary, and like you said, a big part of it is where it was placed on the card. It was designed to be secondary.
No, yeah, the UFC, it's like they're going out of their way to spite Mighty Mouse on this, which is one thing when you're doing that to, like, I understand it's their company and Dana does this shit, but you're costing yourself money. This would be like if you had, I don't know, let's just say Dana White had as one of his employees a really well-respected CEO whose job it was to go around the world and talk to foreign people in positions of power. And if Dana just said, I'm really smart and this guy sucks and I don't like him, it'd be kind of weird if he did that, because you think, hey, you need him on your side.
Right.
These things happen sometimes.
They can. Do you consider Mighty Mouse the greatest MMA fighter of all time at this moment?
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah.
The only, okay, I had George St. Pierre number one there.
Yeah.
But when I really, I mean, when you look at the two, it's nothing against St. Pierre or Anderson. It's just Mighty Mouse is a fucking freak.
Do you rule out, like, Anderson and John Jones because of the USADA failures?
No.
But just in general, you would have Mighty Mouse ahead of Jones, even if Jones was clean and it, oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Because, I mean, John Jones never did anything like that. And this is 11 in a row.
Right.
And he's just so good in there. And he looks like he's fighting to his potential. Mm. Like, John Jones, you kind of, like, yeah, he wins, but it's like, you could do a little better there. And plus, you know, he is such a fuck-up.
But that doesn't really apply to how good he is in the cage. Like, to me, like, Jones, I think, he's beat the better guys. Because, I mean, the one knock, and this is a minor thing, against DJ is the division he's in. He fights at 125, and there's not a lot of 5'4", 125-pound men around to cage fight. There just isn't. Numbers-wise, it doesn't add up. And the murderer's row of guys that Jones has gone through, I think, stack up better than the guys DJ's.
Except for, let me go ahead and look at that top 10 at light heavyweight right now.
Right now, yeah.
I mean, Shogun's been in the top 10 for a decade.
Right. I'm with you.
That's why I always thought St. Pierre's was so impressive.
I agree.
The most historically deep division, and he never got popped for anything.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people would rule out Jones and Anderson because of the failures. And so now if you exclude them, it would be GSP and DJ. And I think DJ's streak is more impressive than GSP's at this point. So I guess it depends what you're looking for when you're talking greatest of all time.
Yeah, and I think there's also, I mean, DJ's, I think, will be more appreciated in time. Some of it's just, it's so quick. Like, this just happened out of nowhere. Like, what, did he win that title in 12 or 13? He's been fighting 3-4 times a year at this level. Sapir kind of slowed down. And so you had, like, a longer period where you identified him as being so great. Whereas DJ, again, is just like, I thought he just fought on Fox. No, that was 3 shows ago. Like, what the fuck?
And for me, with GSP, at the end, he wasn't finishing guys like DJ is now. It's like DJ had a streak where he went to a few decisions, and now it's like he's turned it on even more, and he's finishing, you know, 5 of his last 6 fights or something.
In a division where nobody finishes anyone.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Before that, it ended up being Fabricio Werdum versus Walt Harris, but it was supposed to be Derek Lewis. Lewis pulled out of the fight when he woke up that morning. His back had apparently gone out again, and he claimed that he could not move or get out of bed. So a few hours before the show started, Verdum agreed to take a fight with Walt Harris. Harris was originally on the show scheduled to face Mark Godbeer.
Yeah.
And Harris got destroyed, taken down, and was it an armbar?
Yeah. He took him down and transitioned to the back, faked the choke, grabbed the arm.
Yeah, a minute five into the first. So
and it got him a minute
five. Kind of a massacre.
Yeah, it was a complete joke. I was happy that it happened because, hey, we got to see Verdum fight and was sad for a little bit. He was like, oh, he's not going to fight. I don't know what's wrong with Derek Lewis. If he's waking up and his back hurts that bad, and I know things happen, back and backs are funny, but I presume this isn't just an isolated incident. We know it isn't because he's had problems before. How the fuck is this guy training?
I don't know. He claims to have a couple bulging discs or something, and he's even posted videos on where he's going to the back doctor and they're working on him. So I think it's a legit thing. I don't think he's scared of Verdum and he pulled out, but at the same time, it's just like, dude, I mean, get your back fixed. Don't try and be a pro fighter in the UFC with a back that's fucked up.
Yeah.
I don't even go bowling because my back hurts.
Well, you're not Derek Lewis either. You don't save rednecks. You don't save rednecks from floods.
I would. We're kindred spirits, us two.
I do picture you two in unison one day. Just molding into one Chang and Aang type of delayed Siamese twin.
Mm.
Yeah, but I don't really, again, it's kind of weird that he's able to train and fight. It kind of reminds me of the Mark Hunt situation where Hunt came out publicly like, yeah, I don't remember things when the UFC pulls him off their shows. It's basically like, well, dumbass, you can't brag about how you have brain damage. Well, if you know that Derek Lewis is this fucked up, I think there's a responsibility to either UFC, if not them, then the commission, to make sure that a guy whose back is so fucked up like this isn't fighting. Like, what are these a pre-fight medical is going to catch a bulging disc. They can't fucking catch a staph infection when it's literally staring them in the face. Like, they'd have to hand them an x-ray and write the word bulging disc, unable to walk, put an arrow pointing to the bulging disc, have it signed by the Surgeon General, or Ben Carson, who I thought was the Surgeon General for a second, and then they'd have to be like, well, I mean, what does Derek Lewis want to do if he still wants to fight?
Mara Romero Barea defeated Kalindra Faria. Rear naked choke, 254 in the first.
I said my piece.
Benal Dariush and Evan Dunham went to a majority draw, 29-28. 28-28.
Yeah, it was a good fight, good war. Funny to have another draw on this show.
It was a 10-8. Dariush had a 10-8 first round or something,
no,
right?
No, Dariush got docked a point in the first because Dunham was on the ground as he's coming up. Dariush threw a knee, and it went for the head, but it wasn't really like the full knee hit. It was kind of like the thigh hit, but it was enough.
Was that? No, that was the Venata fight, I think.
Was it?
Venata Bobby Green.
Oh, maybe it was. Maybe Dariush dropped him in the first.
I think Dariush, like, dominated the first and got 10-8 on two cards and then lost the second and third.
That good thing. It was a good fight.
Yeah, what we can remember of it. On the prelims, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot. Lando Venata and Bobby Green went to a split, a draw as well.
Too. Yeah.
What's going on over there?
Good Old Days, the official music video by Macklemore featuring Kesha.
What does this have to do with anything?
Nothing. It popped up on Facebook. It's like, well, that sounds like a disaster in the making. Those two twits together.
Matt Schnell won. That made me happy. John Moraga defeated Magomed Bilatov, and Bilatov is probably going to be killed by Ramzan Kadyrov any day now for his loss. And fight of the night went to Lando Venata versus Bobby Green, and performances of the night were DJ and John Moraga.
Yeah, Moraga should have should have, after he won, just said, "I love cock. And I love cock so much that I beat up this man. This man lost to a cock lover." Just a sealed Bibliotunov's fate.
Yeah. All right. So that was...
If you said that, though, it would have been interesting there in Wachistan, Kazakhstan, I think, if they showed the fight, because then they'd have to, like, everybody be watching it, and there would just be silence. They'd be like, what is John Moraga saying? This doesn't make any sense. Wait, these people don't exist. Why? You can't put those words in that order. It's forbidden. It doesn't make any sense. Hey, Bob, did you know we can suck cock? Really? Yeah. John? Oh, I'm in. Yeah. And then democracy flourished.
UFC 216 was, I don't want to say overshadowed, but obviously the shooting in Vegas kind of put a damper on the show. They did a couple tributes to the victims, and Dana gave a speech, and they had them all, some of the victims or first responders or something, in the cage, and the guy from House of Pain sang a song.
That was the best part.
So they kind of,
don't skip over the,
you know,
part.
Had, are you talking about Jason Alvin?
Yeah.
Well, originally, UFC reached out to Jason Aldean, who's this country singer, I guess. I've heard of him, but
he
didn't pick him out the lineup. I realize that. Okay. So Dana apparently wanted him to sing the national anthem or God Bless America or whatever.
I think it's the national anthem, and then Everclear, whatever.
Everclear, somebody different. Everclear's a band. Everlast.
Everlast did.
Which is even weirder, because that's like the boxing brand, isn't it? Isn't Everlast?
Sure.
Am I thinking of Bet?
No, it's Everlast. I think that's where he took the name from.
Can you do that? I'm going to call myself Nike.
Yeah, because there's no market. Yeah, you could probably, because there's no market confusion.
Huh. That's interesting. Should name a restaurant Nike and see what happens.
If you were trying to associate yourself with Nike, the brand, then you'd be in trouble. But if you weren't...
No, I'll just wear Reebok.
Well, there you go. You could get away with it. It'd be... I wouldn't recommend trying it. Nike's got a lot of money for the lawyers, but fuck it, I'm bored. I'll do it.
So anyway,
how hard is it to run a restaurant?
Aldean did decline Dana's invitation to sing the national anthem at UFC 216. He said he wasn't feeling up to it and wasn't going to sing again for a while, according to White. And then he showed up on Saturday Night Live and performed on SNL instead. So this did not make Dana happy. He said Aldean's image was more important than coming back to Vegas and playing for the people who are his fans and who got shot watching him play, White said. Fuck you, Jason Aldean. Stay out of Vegas.
Hey, you guy who was at the footsteps of the worst mass shooting in modern history. Fuck you. You want to come back to the scene of the crime? Faggot. Like, who does that? Come on. Like, if there was, like, a school teacher from Columbine, and instead of calling back for an assembly, she went and gave a speech in New York, would you go, oh, fuck you. You'd be a monster for doing that. And again, and if there's anybody else that did it or said it, you could argue, like, if I'm like a fan, I'd be like, come on, man, like, this is the UFC. These are your people. Be there for them. Don't go to that New York City bullshit with Saturday Night Live, because that's no kind of... It doesn't feel like it appeals to country fans right now. But Dana White, you can't do this. You can't be the one to say fuck you. It just comes across as really, really petty, like, because it implies... It's, you know what it is? It's very Trumpian. It's like Trump saying that if you kneel against a flag, you kneel against me type of deal. Like,
yeah.
Just leave people alone if they've been involved in a mass shooting. You've been involved in a mass shooting, you get a 1 week at least before anyone says fuck you. You should get at least a week.
He said,
I don't even think you could be done sitting Shiva in a week.
He also said, those are people who buy your albums, and none of you country music people could sing the anthem in front of survivors and first responders.
None of you? Like, you went to all of them?
And apparently, every country musician ever. Yeah.
Whatever. Shut up, you dumb. He really is Donald Trump. Like, it's maybe this is part of the reason why Trump doesn't bother me as much, because I've seen Dana White and Vince McMahon, and like, these people are the same soul. Like, they may be different bodies, but they are three heads of Satan's soul.
They're all related to like the same original carny.
I think so. There's something about it, man. There's something about these people.
Like, there's something from the P.T. Barnum freak show era. Somebody had sex with a few women, and they were all from the same cloth. The
bearded lady nailed Chang and Ang.
Dana White, he's something else. Then Dana White was in the news again. You mentioned this earlier, but Mark Hunt was pulled from his next fight.
Against
Marcin Chibora.
How the fuck did I remember that?
So, essentially, Hunt is pissed, and he says he plans on taking action towards the UFC and company president Dana White. If you remember back, as far as I know, Hunt still has a lawsuit out against Zuffa, and he's fought for the company since then, which is odd, stemming from the Brock Lesnar fight where he claims that Lesnar and UFC were in cahoots and both knew he was on steroids and didn't do anything about it. While that's still going on, we also have this where on Instagram he took a selfie and wrote, at Dana White, you piece of shit motherfucker, why you fuckers pull me from the fight? You getting another lawsuit, you fuckwit. You can kiss my ass, you bald-headed prick. You put that chicken shit bitch in, get fucked, cocksucker.
Yep. That's a man who clearly has the mental faculties to fight, has not suffered any brain damage.
He said, I spent hours the other day with the doctors. I was cleared to fight. The interview I did with Player's Voice was misquoted. I don't slur my words, and it is a running joke between my wife and me. My memory isn't that great, but who remembers shit they don't want to?
Between my wife and I, Mark. That's why we all know you have brain damage.
Maybe it's a New Zealand thing.
I'm sorry, but grammar is grammar, regardless of where you're at. Unless you're in Britain, and they just skip fucking things all the time. Seriously, dude, you can't win an argument. When the company's like, we're not going to let you fight, because you have a brain damage.
You tried some more. I'm disappointed that I've been withdrawn from the fight. I have passed all medicals 2 days ago, and spent $100,000 on camp. The truth is, the legal case I have filed has caused me to be withdrawn. The interview has been taken out of context, and want to reassure all my fans, I slur my words only when I have a drink. I'm fit and healthy, and would have understood if the UFC requested a medical to ensure my safety. However, this is total bullshit. Fuck you, Dana. You've always hated me, you dog.
Look, dude, they're not going to try to give you the benefit of the doubt when you're suing them, and then you say, by the way, I have brain damage caused by, in part, your steroid fighters that I'm suing you about. Like, what the fuck? You can't do that. Like, you can't sue a guy and say, hey, this guy is stabbing me, and then sue him to say, don't stab me anymore, but then get angry if he doesn't want to stab you. Like, what do you want? They're trying to save your life here. And what are you paying $100,000 for a camp? What the fuck is that? What on earth are you possibly doing? I've seen you fight, Mark Hunt. You haven't changed it all. Like, Mark Hunt's got a drinking problem. And I don't know about this whole taken out of context thing. I thought it was an essay he wrote. But even then, I'm pretty sure your words aren't taken out of context, dude. We all know exactly what you're saying, and it was accurate and it was true. What he said was probably the right thing. He's a 40-year-old fighter who's been a kickboxer for decades, whose entire game plan is, I get hit in the head real hard, and I still stay standing. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you got brain damage. You better hope that Boston gets their fucking shit in gear soon.
BU, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought you meant the entire city.
Well, I was thinking the whole city, because I felt like there was Boston and like somebody else, maybe like Harvard or something, and they're all working on it. to save Mark Hunt.
I think it might be too late. More Dana White talk while we're on that subject. He was on the Dan Le Batard show, and he was talking about Brock Lesnar. Apparently, Lesnar is still under contract with WWE until next August, White revealed. Who knows what would have happened? I don't count my chickens anymore, I'll tell you that. The WWE didn't want to do it again. You saw what happened last time. He was under contract, and it doesn't look good for anybody. So he's essentially saying, I mean, there were rumors a couple months ago, if you remember, that Brock was back in the testing pool, and they said it was bullshit, and it wasn't true, yada, yada, yada. And now that John Jones is out possibly for 4 years, they're saying he can't come back because of his WWE contract, but it's probably more because of Jones.
Dana's got that same thing that, again, that Trump has, where he talks about things, it's like this, like you and I would talk about them, or just our opinion, like, yeah, she'd be better this way or better that way, with no seeming appreciation for the fact that he's the guy that gets to do things now. Like, every time Trump talks about things, he's like, something should be done about this. Like, dude, you do things. You got the job. I'm not always sure if he's fully aware of that. And the way Dana's talking is like, you know, you saw what happened last time, and it doesn't look good for them. I'm like, what? When he fought for you and used steroids, that looks bad for WWE? What? You think that WWE is afraid to have him fight for you because you'll make them look bad? It's just asinine. I don't even know what he's trying to say. He's just stupid.
I'm not sure either. Either way, Fabricio Verdum's actually going to step in for Mark Hunt on the Sydney show and fight Marcin Tybura on short notice.
Marcin Tybura, the only reason I really know his name is because back when I was a kid, the developing crew for Madden, whatever year it was, I was playing 96, 97 or something like that, was Tyburan. And they had, like, the cheat things, like the super team. They had, like, every guy's 100 rating. One of them, I think, was the Tyburans or something like that, and they were, like, a shark. So that's what I think of now.
Interesting. I think Tybura is coming off a win over Arlovski. He beat Arlovski in a boring fight or something?
Everybody's beating Arlovski at this point.
But usually they knock him out.
He probably did.
Okay, I don't remember.
Nobody does. Was that maybe, it was a European show? I know that says a lot. But, like, on the mainland, I think. I think that was a mainland Europe show. I want to say Germany or something like that. Or Poland.
He is from Poland, I know that.
Maybe he was in Poland.
Let's find out.
In Warsaw.
I got to close a couple windows. Now I can open a couple more.
It's not like in Gdansk, where they'll be in 2 weeks.
Tybura has won 3 straight. His last win was over Arlovski in June in Klang, Singapore.
Oh, okay. Well, that's kind of like mainland Europe.
Yeah.
That's American geography, people.
Yeah, you're so good at that. I don't know. Another guy besides Tybura who we have probably forgotten about is Ian McCall. He has been released from his UFC contract, which is always an interesting thing. Sometimes UFC will release a guy and let him go somewhere else, and other times they make him stay and won't let him fight anywhere. Apparently McCall's one of the guys they'll let go, and he says he's not going to fight unless he gets paid $100,000.
So he's retired.
But he also said he would do a 50-50 deal, where he'll fight for 50, and if he wins, he gets another 50.
That's really weird. Like, it's one thing if, like, you're like, you want to throw out and be like, I'll never fight, I won't fight unless it's $500,000. Like, you know, you're setting your price real high, just give yourself the out in case you're like, oh, fuck, I'm not going to turn down that. But when you're out there, I only fight for $100,000 or 50-50. Well, wait, why are you throwing in terms all of a sudden? What the hell is that?
He didn't say he was retiring. He said he wanted a release from the UFC.
Right, but he's pricing himself out of a fight.
Could be. He's hoping to go to Ryzen is his plan.
I guess they might. They're not going to give him 50-50 anymore.
He said, and this is a quote from McCall, People say you don't care that it's blood money. I don't give a flying fuck that it's blood money. You can pay me in blood diamonds. I get into a cage and fist fight for money. I don't care. I don't live there. Of course what Kedarov's doing is wrong. I don't agree with it and would say it to his face, but it's none of my business. My business is to go over there and fist fight. That's it.
Wait.
Sure, war is bad, and guys like that do evil shit, but I don't care. I guess he's saying he would fight in Ryzen or Akhmat.
Okay, I was trying to figure out. I'm like, did that guy run? I'm like, is Japan in a war? Did I miss that part? Yeah, I kind of, you know, good for him for being honest. There's something to be said, because you know what? I'd probably do the same thing. It's one thing that...
You would fight for Kadyrov?
There's something about when you compete, like, for dictators, but, like, if it's in a sport, you're earning your money by winning, by doing your sport, as opposed to... I mean, I guess actually you are pretty much propaganda, aren't you?
Yeah, you think you would get a fair shot over there?
No, but I guess that would be kind of the reason why you'd be okay to earn the money, because if you really win, like, you really beat them up. Like, you cannot argue to yourself, hey, if I go over there, I'm going to take this motherfucker's money and humiliate them in their own country.
Make sure you get paid first.
Actually, you should probably just be comfortable losing and throw the fight so you don't get murdered.
Yeah, they might pay you more to lose.
I just imagine that motherfucker has just a harem of young, hairless boys, and that's what drives all of this.
Sometimes that's the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah, people say that, which I guess is true, but I was thinking about it. Like, homophobia is the only thing we ever use that with. Like, nobody ever thinks that deep down somebody really is black if they're a racist. Like, nobody's walking around thinking that I secretly admire Armenians. But it's like, when it comes to gay people, everybody's like, you don't like gay people? Well, you must be gay. What the fuck kind of logic is that? That doesn't make any sense.
I know, but it always turns out, like, politicians and stuff who are, like, anti-gay or whatever, anti-gay marriage, end up being gay. It's like the classic hypocritical politician move, but...
You guys secretly like Puggles.
I don't at all. That is true. Changing gears here. Honey Jason, do you remember him?
Yeah, from Brazil.
He's in a little bit of hot water. He was caught on tape assaulting a woman during a party in his hometown of Quisada, Brazil, Saturday night. In two videos that went viral, Jason is caught landing a punch on a woman while she's on the ground, pointing his finger and yelling at her. Brazilian news outlet G1 reported that the woman being attacked by Jason is actually his sister. Women's Protection Police Commissioner Hyena Siebra told the outlet that the case is being investigated and the MMA fighter is expected to give testimony soon. Jason isn't responding to requests for comments at this time. There's a question about whether he's actually been released from the UFC or not. He said he was still under contract, but the UFC is saying they released him several months ago when he lost 3 of 4 bouts in a row.
Well, he might be up for a position either in Hollywood or the Trump administration.
Still be like the ambassador to Brazil, maybe.
Yeah. I wonder if they even have one of those yet. I'm not even joking. I don't know if they have that. I mean, look, shouldn't hit a woman. I get that, but
it's your sister.
Honestly, as soon as you said sister, I'm like, oh, okay. It wasn't nearly as upsetting to me. And I think it really comes down to when it's domestic violence with, like, you know, somebody you live with and who's a fan like that. Like, there's that element of, like, possession, but, like, nobody's like, people just stop seeing their brothers and sisters all the time. Like, if every time I saw my brother, he punched me, I'd just be like, all right, well, I don't have to see you because I'm an adult. So, like, I'm married to you or something. Like, okay, well, fuck you. You punched me. And, you know, I'm sure he punched her when they were kids. And fuck, bitch probably had it coming. It's always a good defense.
I have a hunch that maybe there were alcoholic beverages involved in it. Usually people make poor choices when they're under the influence of things like beer. On Monday, the UFC announced that Modelo Especial would replace Bud Light next year. move will bring an end to the relationship the UFC had with Anheuser-Busch, an affiliation that began in 2008. Dana White said, Modelo is an amazing brand that shares UFC's unmatched commitment to its fan base. I love Modelo, and we're already talking about doing a lot of exciting things together. This has to be a downgrade. How do you go from Bud, the Anheuser-Busch,
right,
the biggest beer, liquor, malt beverage, whatever you want to call it, company in the entire world, to Modelo?
Well, it's probably because you were talking to the guys at Anheuser-Busch, and you're like, hey, you guys want to sponsor us? And they said, yeah, how about we just use the Modelo brand, because they own Modelo. I just looked it up. I was like,
do they?
Yeah.
Even so, Grupo Modelo
is a large brewery in Mexico owned by the Belgian-Brazilian Anheuser-Busch InBev.
Okay, I didn't know that. And, okay, then that makes it a little more better,
and
I guess.
I think this is the key one. It has 63% of the Mexican beer market.
But even so, is it more than Corona?
Yeah.
How the fuck? That's crazy.
Grupo Modelo, its brands include Corona. Modelo, Modelo, and Pacifico. Like, that's
okay.
These things are all...
Well, actually, I know more about this than I thought, because I'm like, how the hell? Okay, all right. Then that makes sense. But even so, just from, like, a branding standpoint for the UFC,
yeah,
wouldn't you rather have Bud and Bud Light on your cage than Modelo? Like, they seem so uptight about, like, Condom Depot and stuff being on fighters' trunks. You would think they'd want the biggest brands possible. They're not going to go from Harley Davidson to some shittier motorcycle, you wouldn't think.
Yeah, but there's a bit of a difference between the biggest beer producing company in Mexico and a company that sounds like it's where you throw your condoms in when you're done with them. Like, but still, I think it's just, I'm guessing it's just one of those things I don't know about, because it's like a Hispanic beer thing. Like, maybe that market's far bigger for the advertisers than I realize or know.
I'm just thinking, I mean, UFC is still a U.S.-based company, and they've made minimal inroads in Mexico as it is. It's interesting. I'm sure there's a reason for it that
I wonder if it's because like, I know, like, Tecate is, like, the biggest sponsor for everything in boxing. And maybe this is Anheuser-Busch being like, well, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to do MMA.
Yeah, maybe. And, I mean, if UFC's still getting paid the same, they probably don't give a shit what it says. But I just feel like the whole image thing.
It's probably just somebody at WMEI owns a stake in the Modelo company, and it's all a big fucking thing. Like, honestly, we can sit here and pretend like this is being done rationally, and in reality, it's just some sort of money-funneling scam.
Oh, I'm actually reading more than the first two paragraphs of this article, and it says, this is Lawrence Epstein, the CEO of UFC. The nature of the Modelo deal allows the UFC to look at partnering with other beer companies in the international market. Our Bud deal was a global deal, so it prevented us from doing activation and creating sponsorship relationships with local beer companies in really important markets around the world. So that essentially means if they're doing a show, I don't know, in Belgium, they could do Stella Artois. Or if they're doing a show in Canada, they could do Labatt's or whatever, I guess. But I guess in Mexico and the States, you'll be Modelo, and in other countries, you can do whatever you want. I don't know. No one cares about this anyway. I'm just...
Yeah, it would be interesting. Yeah, if they went to Belgium, they could use Stella Artois or any of the other Anheuser-Busch family of beers.
Right.
Everything is owned by Anheuser-Busch. That's what I've learned.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
I guess, like, maybe there's some, you know, other beers in America, but apparently everything outside of America that's a beer is owned by a bunch of Belgians. Well, what the fuck?
I'm pretty sure Coors and Miller are still... their own.
Yeah, but do those exist outside of the United States?
Oh, I'm sure they've got beers under their umbrella that are foreign, but...
No.
Yeah.
Foreigners are weird. Like, they're not always the big beer people out there. Like, the Europe's got all their own wines and unique shit like that.
Yeah, but, I mean, Belgium's known for its beer. That's what... chocolate.
Yeah, that's what Anheuser-Busch is.
Right, but Anheuser-Busch was purchased by InBev, which was the Belgian company. It wasn't the other way around.
Right, so they... Yeah. I don't know.
Diageo is another big one. But anyway, let's move along.
Yeah, I lost interest in this halfway through.
Me too. Gokhan Saki has another fight. I know you'll be excited. He's going to be taking on Khalil Roundtree.
All right.
Do you think...
Khalil Roundtree, in my head, looks like a big black guy with like predator type of hair. Kind of like a big skinny neck. I don't know why.
He had a knockout win where he stood over the guy in his last fight. Remember that?
Yeah, okay.
He's like kind of like towered over him, and the ref had to move him away.
Always a boss move.
Somebody'll have to get knocked out in that fight, I would think, unless Roundtree just tries to take him down. That's all the new fights I saw come up this week. That's why I mentioned it. And then it's time for 20 years ago today. Do you know what happened?
We should probably, like... Are you always doing it every 20 years?
Nope. I changed it up.
Oh, okay. I'm like... Okay, 20 years ago today is 1997.
Correct. So far, so good.
Yeah.
This is my favorite part of the show because I could, like, literally leave for, like, 5 or 6 minutes while you just talk to yourself.
Okay, 1997, nothing in Pride. Japan would have had some Shuto or Pancreas. Pancreas would have been the only thing noteworthy. I think my Pancreas had pretty much died out by 97, I'm going to guess, though. I'm going to say this is probably UFC-related, 97. Let's see, 93, 94, 95, 96, 3 years there. So 1997, I don't think this wouldn't have been UFC 9 in Detroit. That was like in the spring or something, I think. This feels like a UFC in Alabama. Some sort of super fight deal with Mark Coleman is what I'm thinking. Or a Coleman fight. I would say Mark Coleman debuts in the UFC.
Incorrect.
Damn it.
October 11th, 1997. Pride 1. Pride's first show. The debut of Pride.
Wow.
You're on the right track. Tokyo Dome, Tokyo, Japan. Wow. 47,860 people were in attendance to see Hickson Gracie defeat Takada by armbar at 447 in the first round.
That's so fantastic that happened. I think there were people in Japan really like they believed in Takada. They must have just been so fucking heartbroken to see that. Because it wasn't like it was one of those things where he just got beat so easily, and it wasn't like a flash thing or a fluke thing, and he looked scared in there, and he looked like he clearly, it was very obvious that Takada had no clue what he was doing, and he was the biggest badass they'd ever had, and he just got fucking made look like a bitch. He tapped out and everything. How humiliating for him.
Well, that whole... I gotta admit, like, the whole backstory to that I find fascinating in the history. Like, I'm a history geek to a certain degree when I have the time to actually think about it, but the whole thing with Takada was he was a pro wrestler in UWFI, which was, like, this shoot-style promotion where they did a lot of, like, grappling and submissions, and UWFI even had, like, pay-per-views on in the States in, like, 95, I think, and they did fairly well because... people weren't real familiar with what a real fight looked like and what was fake, and Vader wrestled for him, and Gary Albright and some more sort of legit guys wrestled in UWFI, and then Takada was like their champ and top guy, and there was always this question about if he had like a real legit fight, how would he do? Is he really this great fighter? It all a sham in UWFI. And then there's Hickson Gracie, who's this legendary guy who's supposed to be 10 times better than Hoyce, who's never really fought on TV, but is reportedly 400-0 in street fights and has never lost anybody. And at some point, I know, like, a Japanese wrestler went to Gracie's dojo in, I think it was L.A., somewhere in California, and showed up unannounced, wanted to fight.
Anjo.
Thank you. Wanted to fight Gracie, got in there and got his ass kicked, like, destroyed and tapped.
But he showed up at the school and started bullying some of Hickson's students a little bit, and Hickson found out, and he was being driven to the school, and he was actually taping up his fists on the way, which, in hindsight, if Anjo knew that, he would have shit himself. Like, if you know what you know now, and you hear that Hicks and Gracie's on his way over taping up his fists, I don't care who you are, you're going to be like, John Jones would be like, I'm fucking booking it. I'm sticking around for that shit.
Well, it's funny, too, because I think Anjo thought he had done some training, and he had wrestled in UWFI, too, and knew some grappling or whatever, and nobody really knew. If you lived in Japan in whatever it was, 95, and you've never seen Hicks and Gracie fight, and you know Royce is, like, he's good at submissions or whatever, it's like, you don't really know until you get in there and get your ass whooped.
But you've also seen Ken Shamrock, who they all saw as a pro wrestler and had all that pancreas stuff, go to the UFC and be, you know, an even with everybody. So they, and the way that, you know, everything was so rudimentary then that nobody really knew what an actual fight looked like. So a lot of those guys in pancreas had so many work shoots anyways. So I think a lot of people in Japan, you know, I don't want to say rightfully so, but, you know, justifiably probably could believe in Takada. But Takada didn't believe in Takada. He looked terrified when he's in there. Like, the way he would, like, hold on to the ropes and, like, look around, like, oh, fuck me. Oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be real bad.
Yeah, that's how I would have felt. And it was funny, too, because Hickson, I mean, it's not like he could strike. Like, if you look at him now, he's, like, got his hands down. He's so, like,
he looks scared, too.
Yeah, obviously he's good on the ground and comfortable there, but it was like standing, just like Hoist. They're like totally fish out of water. They can't strike. But anyway, so 20 years ago it was Pride. Other fights on the card, you had Kimo versus Dan Severn went to a time limit draw.
Legendary 30 minutes of awesome.
How come?
Because they just circled around each other and slapped. They didn't go to the ground. They didn't do anything. It was a repeat of Severn and Ken Shamrock from Detroit. It was abysmal. It was hilarious. I remember watching it, and it was one of those things where I'm like, cause I didn't realize that Pride didn't have, like, time limits. I was like, how long did this fucking thing go on? What the hell is happening?
Then I know there were some fights on the card that were works.
Was Koji Katao and Nathan Jones on that show?
Yes, yeah, that was the one I was going to mention. Yeah, so Katao was a sumo guy, right?
Yeah.
And then Nathan Jones was like this ex-con from Australia
from
who ended up going to WWE at one point. He was wrestling for them, but Henzo Gracie fought on the card. Akira Shoji.
Oh, okay, that was Shoji.
Gary Goodrich defeated Oleg Taktarov by knockout, and that's all that really matters on that card.
To me, it's the nature of nostalgia, but Pride, for me, like Pride 1 to Pride 17, 21-ish or so, to me that's still always going to be the best fighting. I just love this show. All the shows are fun, and you had really great fights, and you had freak show shit, and it was just entertaining, and you know, they just had, especially those 10 Prides in a row, the first 10 where they just had Quadros and Boss Rutten in the studio drinking, doing commentary after the fact, and they would spoil things in advance, and it was hilarious.
If you look at that first show, it's almost surprising that they even made it back for a second one, because that easily could have been a one-off, with Takada getting killed in the main event. You know, and then they came back for a second, and I think on Pride 3, Takada got a win or something, and then they rematched with Hickson, and he got killed again. And then he had Sakuraba come on. So, I mean, there was always that native star that gave the Japanese fans some hope, and I think that's what continued to draw for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was so perfectly booked in that It's Okada, the big hero, Bizolder, and he lost the legendary Gracies, and then the new up-and-coming guy also represents pro wrestling, and he defeats all of them. And, I mean, it's brilliant. It's perfect booking, and it was just real. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Not if you ask Chael Sonnen.
I mean, that, a lot of that shit is, I don't know. I mean, actually, in hindsight, we shouldn't be surprised that they had another show, because it's just a fucking money laundering scam.
Yeah,
all that
you're
stuff.
Right.
It's amazing how much of everything in Japan with, like, fighting, it's just a front. It's incredible.
Yeah.
For all the people, you know, I give people shit for fighting Kazakhstan. Look, it's not like the mob are really any better human beings.
Probably not.
Like, you think about mobsters, we kind of glorify them a little bit. They're animals. They're animals
yeah.
and thugs. So,
and they're not good people.
Yeah,
I don't hang out with a lot of mobsters.
I've met some.
This weekend, we said there were no major shows. The only real, even minor show would be an LFA show with Mackenzie Dern fighting, like, third from the top. Dern's fighting at 125. She's the, you know, jiu-jitsu world champion who people expect to go to UFC and has some star potential. Other than that, nothing this weekend.
Yeah, it's a bad weekend to be alive.
If you base your life around fights, men fighting in a cage, yes. In other news, the U.S. men's national soccer team is not going to the World Cup in 2018. Is that upsetting?
Yeah. This is really upsetting. It's humiliating. Soon
for you?
Yeah, for the whole fucking country, it's humiliating.
I'm not embarrassed at all.
You're not a real American, because this is bullshit. These fucking pretty boy assholes fucking blew it. They played like bitches.
Are they handsome? Are they handsome men?
Christian Pulisic is a pretty good-looking guy, yeah.
All right.
But, I mean, he's 19. He's more of a boy. Good twink. But they went down there, and they had no business losing this game. They had no business losing almost any of their games. Mostly,
isn't it hard? It's hard to win in Trinidad and Tobago, though, isn't it?
You know what else is hard to be? From Trinidad and Tobago. It's like 15 people on an island that's filled with water. The stands that they had legitimately looked like they held about 3,000 people. And that's like their big national stadium. Like, this is, and they were already eliminated, and they were putting out their B team because they didn't give a shit. And we still lost 2-1. This was pathetic. The whole team was embarrassing, except for Pulisic, who did everything he could at times. The rest of these guys they're pampered. They're an older generation. Most of them are playing in the United States now, so they're not really, they don't have that fire to challenge themselves and get better. The whole organization, top to bottom, Sunil Gulati, president of USA Soccer, should be fired immediately. Bruce Arena should be gone. The whole thing needs to be redone. This is a gigantic disaster. The United States hasn't missed a World Cup since 1986. And
yeah.
We have no excuse. We're not in Europe or in South America where really good teams don't make it. We're in fucking CONCACAF. We have to be one of the top four teams, and we couldn't outdo Honduras and Panama. We couldn't outdo a country that basically only exists to be a canal for us. Like, what the fuck? This is pathetic. This team's a joke, and I hate them all, except for Pulisic.
Huh.
Frustrated because this exact same fucking thing's going to happen in Liverpool this weekend and the next week. It's just going to be bad, too. So, fuck them all.
I saw something like a day or two prior, like, after they got they won the game prior, it was like a 98% chance they would make it to the
yeah.
World Cup. But if they had gotten a draw, they'd be in. But also, like, a couple other teams, like, either won or the right team
yeah.
lost or whatever. So it was, like, really slim chances they weren't going
to
make it.
The United States had to just either win, obviously, or get a draw, or they could lose. And all they had to do is hope that Costa Rica and Mexico, who were the two best teams in their group, at least all they had to have was one of those two teams win, and they both lost. Like, it's incredible. And Mexico is just as, honestly, for them losing their games, it's pretty much as bad as the United States losing to Trinidad and Tobago. It's just that, you know, they still get to go to the fucking World Cup. But it's just, it really was. I think I saw somebody on TV, Taylor Twellman, I think, said there were like 24 different scenarios for what could have happened, and only one of them involved the United States not going to the World Cup. Like, these guys really shit the bed. Like, they had to be one of the three best teams in their division, outside of their group, to automatically go. And, their main powerhouse is Mexico, which would be good, and Costa Rica. And they couldn't be one of the top three. And then if they were still not one of the top three, they could have been the fourth team, and then they would have gotten a playoff game against New Zealand. No, I'm sorry, Australia. They couldn't even be the fourth fucking team. Literally, the only team worse than them was Trinidad. That's it. This is pathetic. This is and more than that, they got outplayed by Trinidad. They didn't deserve to win that game. If they had won, if the United States had gone to advance the World Cup, they would not have deserved it. They did not deserve to advance the way they played throughout the entire group. They were undisciplined. They just didn't seem to give a shit. They just acted like fucking brats. And I'm glad that Tim Dempsey doesn't get another chance. I'm really glad that Michael Bradley doesn't get to fucking do anymore. That bald-headed fucking loser can't play a midfield for his life.
Dude, I saw some commentators or soccer people blaming it on, like, pay-to-play. I don't even know what that means. Is that, like, a real thing? Or, like, the United States is a big country with a lot of money. They should have a better soccer team, right?
It's a cultural thing.
I understand, but you would still think with, even if it's a much smaller sport, if it's the fifth sport in the richest country in the world with 370 million people, you think they'd still be pretty good. I mean, swimming's not a big sport in this country, and we win all the medals in that.
Yeah, but swimming's not a big sport anywhere else.
Like, right.
It just so happens it's the one sport that everybody in the world does. So it's not like we have to be better than England. We have to be better than the entire world. Pay-to-play is essentially is how sports work in America. You want a kid to play Little League Baseball, you pay a fee.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, they don't
What
have
other
it.
Countries?
It's like the opposite. All the major clubs, in England, for example, Liverpool has academies, and starting like 7 years old or whatever, they're looking to recruit kids. And so they have this weird system where these kids get put in like these feeder systems where they go to the soccer high school. And they still learn, but look, for developing well-rounded people, America's system is probably better. But, you know, I think there's also some of the fact that we do have five or six sports. And, yeah, we have more people in this country, but if football is your most popular – I don't want to say football. Basketball is your most popular sport in Chicago and in New York, and if baseball is number two – well, that's still, like, all the people in Chicago are still going to be filtering down. So you're only going to get, like, the fifth level, the fifth best athletes, really, in any area who give a shit about it. Like, you still need your best. And, you know, it's not like we can just take our best, our second best.
It's just weird, because, I mean, how many, like, really great soccer players do you need? Like, you can have a good team with 20 people, right? The 20 best Americans can't...
It's more than just...
It can't be Trinidad and Tobago. It seems crazy to me.
It is crazy. It's really fucking embarrassing. It's really, really stupid. We should be better. But it's also more than just needing 20. Like, you need hundreds. Because you need people to be able to compete against each other. And
yeah.
it's not a coincidence that Christian Pulisic went to Europe at 16 and got put into the German Academy there in Dortmund. Like, that helps it because, you know, iron sharpens iron. It's like if you're great at basketball, you're sure shit not going to hone your skills in France. France actually is okay at basketball by European standards, but you're coming to Harlem.
It's like training with Coach Edmund.
Yeah, exactly. If you want the best, you got to go to the best.
I also know you are a big baseball fan. That the playoffs are underway. The Red Sox are out. I know that. Any other... thoughts on how the playoffs have been going so far? You have a World Series pick.
Well, the Yankees are up right now over the Indians as we record, going into the bottom of the seventh.
So the Yankees are good again. That's been
a long time.
Right?
And the Yankees are going to be good for a long time, too. Like, they're good without spending money right now. And they can spend money if they want, obviously.
But the last 10 years, they've sucked, right?
They won their last series, I think, in 2005 or 2010. Okay. I don't know what it was. Like, it's the Yankees. They've never been terrible. Like, right. Their idea of a rebuild, it's kind of like the Red Sox. The Red Sox are never really terrible. Like, they might have a bad year, but it's because the team has a bad year, not because you looked on paper and go, ain't no way in fucking hell we're winning anything. They're not Detroit. Kansas City's more. Everybody's doing better now. As far as who's going to win the World Series, it's a really tough pick this year because the top teams in each league are really, really good. Like, in the National League, Cubs, Nationals, or Dodgers, any one of those three that wins the whole thing wouldn't be a surprise in the least. Like, and they're super, like, all those are super teams. And in the American League, a team like the Yankees is great. It'll probably end up being something like Houston from the American League, just because it's an off year for baseball. I'm just making up shit here. But like Houston versus the Nationals. And everybody will go, oh, okay. And we don't have to care about baseball anymore.
Are the Cubs in it?
Yeah, they're playing the Nationals in their series right now. Okay. Their game was delayed today because there's a lot of rain. And the Cubs get, the Cubs win it all, it wouldn't be a surprise. It's weird that it's not a surprise, but it's true.
In other news, a big chunk of California is on fire right now.
Yeah, what's that about?
What do you mean, what's it about?
I saw something like, just because the biggest state or the richest state in America has half of it catch on fire, in this day and age, that ain't making the news all the time. There's a lot of other shit going on. I can't keep track of all these tragedies.
Oh, so you're actually asking me for some information.
Yeah, like I'm aware that there's some forest fires or whatever in California. I don't know where. I'm guessing by San Francisco.
You know what's funny about this? The main reason I follow it at all was because it was in Napa.
Yeah.
And it's affecting a lot of the wineries out there. But I think like almost like 2 dozen people have died or something.
Yeah.
And there's that story about Henry Cejudo, too.
He jumped out of a burning house or something.
It was on fire. Like, he was in a hotel. He was there for some charity
Did
golf
he try
tournament,
to fly wait out the window?
I wish I understood what that reference was.
No, because if he jumps out the window and wants to fly, and he's a flyweight.
Oh, I get it. Okay, good one.
I should just end the show.
Ali Abdelaziz. No, I just keep going. I guess is Cejudo's manager, which makes me like Cejudo less, but Ali says, Cejudo woke up to the fire alarm, but he thought it was just a false alarm, so he went back to sleep. He woke up at 4 a.m. to his room being filled with smoke. He had no choice but to jump from the balcony on the second floor. He landed on some fire and burned his foot, but he is safe.
Jumped into the fire? This is not a very good way to go. Like, I don't want to get hit by that fire. I'll jump into the fire. Like, you don't land on fire. He makes it sound like it broke his fall. He landed in some fire.
Maybe he secretly wanted to be like a Dudley boy or something.
Also, how dumb are you? If you're in a hotel right now and you hear the fire alarm go off in the middle of the night, who's just like, I'm going to go back to sleep? Wouldn't you, part of you go, fuck me, another shooting? This is exactly what I would think right now if I was in a hotel and I heard something. I'd be like, oh no, not again.
He on Instagram, Cejudo put up a picture of his foot, which does indeed have blisters on the bottom of it. I'm surprised he didn't put shoes on. Anyway, hey everybody, just want to say thank you for the love and support. Prayers to all the families that lost somebody in the fire. I'm doing fine and my foot isn't broken, but I did burn my foot on the way down after jumping out the window. It's just a long story, but I'll keep you guys posted when I do an interview. As of now, I'm on my way to Natal, Brazil to take care of business at UFC 218. So he does have a fight come up against Sergio Pettis, and apparently he's going to fight with the burns on his foot, and he got out in the nick of time. But he's quite going, a few other people weren't as lucky, man.
So he's going to Brazil to train?
I think that isn't the fight in Brazil.
No, 218 is Detroit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess, yeah. Sounds like it.
Man, I mean, if I had an injury like that with an open wound, I wouldn't go to Brazil.
Well, you're not an Olympic gold medal winner either.
Yeah, I was going to have staph infection.
Neither do I.
He might. Well, it won't matter, apparently.
Henry Cejudo is more likely to have staph infection than either of us.
Yeah, that's for sure. He's okay. Also more likely to get burned alive in his sleep. Okay, maybe not on that one.
I have smoke detectors.
I drink a lot and I have a scented candle.
Do you have carbon monoxide detectors?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right.
I think they're required by law, aren't they?
I don't know. Sometimes you're like, I'm not doing what the man tells me. I don't know with you. You're all over the place.
I don't make any decisions on shit that goes on the house.
All right. You're all anti-regulation. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm anti-regulation. I'm not anti, like, things that are good for me. Like, I don't want the government to, like, make it against the law if I don't brush my teeth, but I'm still going to brush my fucking teeth. I don't need a law to tell me to brush my
teeth. Well, you just said you had the carbon monoxide detector because it was the law.
No, I didn't.
Oh.
I just said, I don't know what goes on. I don't know what people put in houses and shit.
Oh, I didn't hear you right. I thought you said you did it because it was the law.
I also obey the law.
Okay.
I just whine about things. That's all.
Okay. Well, some people who should really be whining are these people in Napa. 21 people have died, and 3,500 homes and businesses have been destroyed. In terms of future production, a lot of people will have to rebuild and replant, so we're bound to see a bit of a grape shortage. So your wine might go up in cost.
Are we going to fucking send aid to them, too?
I'm less apt to, because if you have a winery, no offense to all our fans and winemakers in Napa, but you guys have a lot of money already. You know, it's like the Mondavis out there, and to buy like an acre of land in Napa is like $100,000 or something insane. So they're all probably going to be okay, and I'm sure they're insured. But these fires are crazy, man. I know
that's more people dead than I think are dead in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, it's great. Well, yeah, probably.
Puerto Rico doesn't other exist.
One, they don't even have power. Let's see.
Man, that's a fucking crazy effort. Like, I saw, like, the news, I think it was right before Tucker was on or something like that. I just saw, like, the Chiron thing you just briefly flashed, like, hundreds trapped in fire. I'm like, what do you mean you're trapped in a fire? You can't be, like, if you're trapped in a fire, it shouldn't last long enough that you can put it on the news. It should be like people were trapped in a fire. It should not be an ongoing situation where you are continually trapped in a fire. So yeah, not a closet, R. Kelly.
I would just want it to be over. I would want it trapped in a fire for hours.
I don't know. I have a feeling that if you're in that situation, you go, oh, wait, no, I changed my mind. I don't want it to be over yet. Don't keep going. I don't want it to be over. Because you don't want to die.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm reading some of this story, but Napa's on fire. If you're a wine drinker, get wine from Oregon.
Weed is going to go up too.
That's probably what's causing it.
The whole state of California is really happy though.
I mean,
that's why nobody's stopped the fires yet. They're like.
I know the jury's not out on climate change, and one shitty summer doesn't really prove anything when the planet's been here millions of years, but it sure has given those climate change scientists more ammunition.
I guess. I mean, I have no
half
idea.
The country's on fire. There were a record number of hurricanes.
And the other half of the country's got a whole bunch of water. It sounds to me like nature's balancing itself out.
It's all going to meet in Kansas.
Hey, I live in Illinois. Literally nothing bad's going to happen to me except for it'll get a little warmer. I'm
right.
Fine. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. See, I don't believe that. I think deep down you do care about other people, but you put on a tough guy persona. That's what I think.
I care about people on an individual level. I care about arguments on a grander scale. I mostly just don't think it matters. Like, I don't think there's anything I can do. I can just piss in the wind. So.
I wasn't saying there was. I'm just saying there's, I don't know, there's more and more evidence that there's a problem.
I did have this thought today. I was leaving work as I spit my gum in the air and I just nailed it like Mr. Perfect. Like, I really nailed it. Every time I spit gum anywhere, I always do that.
Yeah.
And
do you chew gum regularly?
All throughout the day, yeah.
Really?
I do it as like an appetite suppressant. Because like I like to fidget.
Are you concerned about your appetite?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to lose some weight. But it's more like if I don't, like, I'll just fiddle, I'll just snack on things. So, like, I find that I just chew the teeth whitening gum, Trident, or whatever the fuck it is. Huh. But yeah, as I was walking to my bus and I spit the gum and nailed it, I was like, I nailed that. And then I had this feeling wash over me of, I should be president. Not that I could, but I'm one of the few reasonable people left. I think people would really rally behind me.
So when you were walking, when you were walking on a sidewalk and spit your gum out into your hand and smacked it across the sidewalk, that's when you decided you should be president.
Yes. That was
like my initial reaction would be like, oh, shit, I should probably grab that gum so no one should walk in it. Not that I should.
No, it went way into the street. I mean, I nailed it. I mean, I fucking clocked this sumbitch. It was a presidential thwack.
Mm.
And that's why I was like, huh, look at that. I could be president.
Speaking of President Trump, he continues to be the dominant person in the news, which probably the president should be, but...
Although this is it's impressive to be in the front and center of the news this week.
He's on quite the run. He's been feuding. I use the term feuding because that's the best way to describe it, with Senator Bob Corker and his own Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson.
When you said feuding, I was like, I have no idea who he's going to say this time.
I know there's so many options.
I didn't know if it's going to be North Korea, Puerto Rico, all of Hollywood, the flag, the act of kneeling. I'm not really sure.
It's amazing. Tillerson apparently called him a fucking moron, and that got out to the press, and there were reports of that. Then on Twitter, like a couple days later, Trump said he wanted to do an IQ test against Tillerson to prove that he wasn't a fucking moron.
Sounds to me like somebody that knows he's pretty smart. He's got nothing to hide.
That could be. Or it's somebody who's really insecure.
Or he's just joking around.
I know, but it's just like, it's always something. And it's just like, it's just so tiresome. I like, parts of me are like, this is hilarious. This guy's so fucked up. But at the same time, I'm like, can't you just be normal for like a couple weeks and just chill the fuck out? And it's like, it's not even possible.
He is who he is. We elected him. It's not like Donald Trump has changed. He's always been Donald Trump. I don't know why anyone expected him to get in office and be like, well, now that I'm in the Oval Office, it's just the ghost of Thomas Jefferson came upon him. And he's like, oh, I better get in straight and narrow. No, he's a fucking carny. He's Dana White with a little bit more hair.
Right. It's just a little scarier when the carny is supposed to be, you know, running the country. It's okay if you're just on The Apprentice or running an MMA company or WWE. That's
or
one
a
thing.
A steak company.
It's a little different when you actually can affect people's lives, potentially.
Yeah, fuck that. He ran hotels, beauty pageants, schools, restaurants, kind of. I mean, Donald Trump basically ran everything you need to run anyways. Obama didn't run no school.
Right, but if you serve, like, a shitty steak, it doesn't really matter. If you're deporting immigrants or...
I think
defunding programs, it can really have an adverse effect on people. As opposed to if your pillows flush properly at his hotel, that doesn't matter.
But how many people that cook a really good steak do you think can run a hotel chain? That's what's impressive about it. You know, I guarantee you that, what's his face? Bam!
Emerald.
Emerald couldn't successfully put together a beauty pageant featuring scantily clad women from around the world. That takes talent. It takes brains, damn it. Don't underestimate this man. Also, he is president.
I'm looking forward to him going after Eminem any day now. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. Eminem put out a freestyle, apparently a freestyle rap about Trump, where he buried him and called him a racist and told him to fuck off, basically, and raised his hand in support of Colin Kaepernick. It's gotten, I don't even know how many retweets and stuff, but millions of retweets, millions of views, and towards the end of the video, Eminem even said, you can either be a fan of me or a fan of him, but if you support Trump, I don't want you to support me in my music, essentially, which was interesting. Obviously, in a day or two, nobody's even going to care or talk about it, but for today, it was a big story.
Yeah, I guess it's the rare slow news day in this day and age.
When one of the biggest musical acts of the last 20-something years comes out and says, fuck you to the president, it still resonates with some people.
His first like music video ever did, he dressed up as Bill Clinton.
He did.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't say fuck Bill Clinton, though.
I am willing to bet that you can find some stuff on his early records, albums, whatever they're called, about Bill Clinton. Like, no, it's not. He didn't quite say fuck you, which that's actually one of the things that's so disappointing, and people call that Trump derangement syndrome. I think it's totally real, because these people are super talented, and all they come up with is fuck you. Like, I know Ari Shaffir, the comedian, he's been having this campaign where he says, look, whenever you see a comedian, or any entertainment, a comedian, and they just say something, and it's not a joke, just reply, oh, what a great joke. Because the point is, it's not that you shouldn't be, you know, political. It's be funny. Be talented. Like, I thought what Eminem did, I'm like, oh, he did his freestyle rap? I'm like, I guess it's freestyle. I don't know. I'm like, wow, this is, you know, he's doing it in his style. Like, this is really good. Now, when you get to the, if you don't like me or fuck you, it's like, but even then, again, that fits with what Eminem's always done. That's who he is. I really didn't have a huge problem with this at all. And, I mean, brought up Colin Kaepernick, which is, I really thought that, he brought up Colin Kaepernick, I thought that just ruined the whole thing, because when you're going, yeah, you're evil, and you do this and that, like, we're all going to die because of nuclear war, and you're a child, blah, 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 and Colin Kaepernick, I'm like, wait, hold on, there's a big difference between these two, right? Like, you can't, if you think that, if you're just as worried about Colin Kaepernick as you are nuclear war, I'm not thinking that you have the most balanced perspective in things here. That said, I think Colin Kaepernick has a chance to become he could be the next president of the United States. Like, I was thinking about this. I assume his parents are American. I know he's adopted from, but I don't know if he knows who his father is. I guess he's born in anyway.
No one knows for sure.
Well, maybe if you're an Obama supporter. But, no, I was thinking about this, because there was like a story that came out and it was kind of like quickly denied, but I think it was a feeler where Kaepernick was reportedly like said something like he'll come back and he doesn't plan to kneel or something like that. And I think I saw something where he talked about like it's time to like, we can't just be protesting, we got to be making progress or something. And I'm like, wait a second. Colin Kaepernick, for good or for bad, he leads this thing, even though he never actually does anything anymore. If he just came out, got signed by a team, and on that first he stood there and put his hand over his heart, holy shit, dude. Everybody would be like, okay. Like, everybody who wants this to go away, even like people like, you know, they support the players, but deep down, like, I really would just like to watch football. They'd be like, look at that. We're healed. We can all like we can all pretend again, and he'd be like the guy that saved football. Like, he totally could do it. He'd be a giant. He'd be the biggest star ever if he really wants to
turn face.
Yeah, and he could just do it. All he has to do is stand and go, "I love America. And now that I brought attention to this issue, it's time to start working to fix it." It's a total easy transition because it's the only logical step for him. Otherwise, if he plays, he's literally going to have to kneel for the rest of his career. Because I'm sorry, you ain't going to undo whatever form of systemic racism you claim exists in the next year or two. But the issues that he's complaining about are so big, they ain't going to be over in this generation. So keep kneeling.
The main thing was, you know, the white police officers shooting unarmed black people, right? I mean, that was the gist of
that
it.
That was the initial protest, yeah.
Right, and now it's...
It's more...
Been made worse by... It's been made worse by Trump, but no. Trump hasn't helped the issue any,
but
obviously.
Racist cops are going to go away in the next... Two or three
Agreed.
Years.
And I don't think most cops are racist. Like, I think there's an issue there, but I don't think most cops are bad people, and I don't think any group necessarily is all bad. I think there's nuance and levels and areas of gray, and yeah, there's some shitty racist cops out there, but I don't think most police officers go into that field with the idea, I'm going to shoot black kids. I don't think that's the case. At the same time, I there's an issue there, and there are some racist cops, and black people aren't treated fairly, and I understand why Kaepernick's doing what he's doing, and I think he has a right to do it. I think it's a freedom of speech issue, and the thing that gets me about it is the Trump administration is pushing this idea that you must stand and respect our country and respect the flag and all this, but the country was founded on, you know, defending your own beliefs and freedom of speech and right, but it should. It's the thing.
Maybe it should, but that stuff. I mean, there are a whole lot of people pissed about this. Like, way more than you would think. And again, keep in mind, like, I think it was 2013 or 2003. I don't know, one of those. In the 2000s, when Hillary Clinton had proposed, I don't know if it was a law or amendment, like, to prohibit the burning of the flag. Like, that shows, like, when it comes to the flag, a lot of people, like, if a liberal like Hillary thinks that she can score points with it, that tells you that part of her base also is like, I don't know, it's the flag. Like, people get very touchy about the flag.
You feel like, though, like, if you go... right wing, it's supposed to be, you know, self-reliance and individual liberties, don't tread on me, and the state, the big government, the federal government's telling you better stand and do this because we say so. Isn't that counterintuitive and totally hypocritical of that party?
Yeah, no, it is, and I will say, though, that the further you get on the right that way, you actually, there's less patriotism. Libertarians tend not to be nearly as patriotic as regular Republicans. Libertarians move more towards open borders. So the further you get into that ideology, the less patriotic people actually are. But even then, amongst the other people, a lot of it's just, yeah, but this is a special thing. And it's stupid, but it's just surface level. That's why,
right.
That's why we shouldn't let people vote. People are stupid. Like, that's why we're really lucky that we had all these smart people that said, these are the rules, you guys have to be really, really sure if you want to get rid of them. And because we're all stupid. If it was absolute democracy, there's no way. There's zero chance we'd have freedom of speech in this country. Look at Europe. They don't have any freedom of speech. There's all kinds of shit you can't say. Mm. And like in France, when there was a leak of Macron's whatever, some shit that came out like a couple days before the election in France, they put down a ban on it and said nobody could talk about this, and nobody did. Like, something they could have negatively, and the reasoning was this isn't part of a fair election. We think the Russians are behind this, and it turns out the Russians have nothing to do with it. Like, they just suppressed it, and you know, you see in Britain, celebrities win all those all kinds of lawsuits against tabloids in Britain all the time because they just don't have it like we do, and I think what's great to hear is, you know. And I really don't feel comfortable. I don't like Trump. Well, I should put it this way. If it was any other president, I'd be very uncomfortable with them saying anything about this. Because it's Trump, I don't think anybody really cares. Like, if Obama or Bush...
It's the dominant news story for the last frickin' month. And it's like, to me, it's just a non-story. Like... If somebody wants to kneel, and I get there's symbolism, I get why the national anthem means I stand and I take my hat off and I put my hand on my chest and look at the flag. And I do that. I would do that. I think it's what you do. But if somebody else doesn't want to, I don't give a shit. I'm not going to tell somebody else what they should do during the national anthem. It's their life. They can do what they want as I will. And to me, it's a victimless, you can't even call it a crime. It's victimless. Nobody gets hurt if Kaepernick kneels.
And that's why everybody likes it.
Nothing bad happens to anyone.
And that's why everyone's arguing over it. It's easy. And it's purely symbolic. It's like when people, it's like trannies in the bathrooms. That's essentially a symbolic fight.
Cause right. I don't like that. It's a waste of time.
Well, I think it's a waste of time, but let's face it. If you're Kaepernick.
California's on fire. Puerto Rico has no electricity. Trump wants to go to war with North Korea. And everybody's talking about people kneeling during a song. It's horseshit.
But if you're Kaepernick, and if you, here's one. If you support the protests, you should be happy. Because
let's draw more attention to it. I agree.
You know, tree falling in the woods, no one's around to hear it. Like, that's why I would kind of say that this is the perfect time for Kaepernick to pivot. Because otherwise, you're going to just have to do this forever.
Mm.
Like, there's, because even if, like, I don't mean that in a totally cynical way. It's just that whatever changes happen, they're going to be very, very subtle and take time. This isn't like somebody saying, let's pass the Civil Rights Act. You go, okay, they're going to pass, like, if there was a specific thing, somebody's like, we're going to do this. Like, legalize gay marriage. I will kneel until you legalize gay marriage. You go, oh, shit, it's done. But when you're kneeling is black people are being treated poorly by cops. That's going to be really tough for somebody to be like, and that was the day. That was the day when we could tell after they passed that legislation. Just turned out, all the dickhead racist cops stopped being dickheads. We just told them not to, and they're like, fine, I guess we're done. We had our fun.
Or if a couple of them go on trial and are found guilty and serve some jail time, I think that helps. Part of the issue is most of them, and I don't have the data, I'm pulling this out of my ass, but it seems like most of them get off or it never even goes to trial, and that's why people get pissed, because there's no sense of fairness or comeuppance in these cases. It's like the cop shoots somebody who's running away from him that's unarmed, and nothing happens to him. If there was, besides like paid leave, something more, punitive happened to these police officers, I think the other side would calm down a little bit.
To me, it's either they keep their job or they go to jail for murder. I don't think there's a middle ground. Either they were lawfully able to shoot someone or they're not. That's it. And
it would be like manslaughter or something, right? It wouldn't be murder.
They knowingly pointed their weapon at somebody, pulled the trigger, and shot them, knowing what would happen.
Yeah.
That's if you and I did that, it would be murder. It's not heat of the moment. Can't think they're overwhelmed by their senses. They're cops. I mean, it's absolutely murder. You can't point a gun at somebody and say, do what I tell you to, and if they don't do what you tell them to, you shoot them and go, Well, actually, you can't if you're a cop. So he flinched. I found the blade on the ground. I mean,
are there any cases where that's happened, though? I'm trying to think of a case where a cop was found guilty of murder.
Oh, yeah. You know, here's the thing. Okay. That does happen. It just doesn't make the news.
Yeah.
Trials take a long time.
Yeah.
And there's justice is never fast. It's never swift like people think it could be, which is good. That's just be mob rule. And there's also the reality in a lot of these cases. People are just lying their ass off. They're saying, oh, this is some innocent person getting shot. And it's always like, no, the guy had a gun, or he was acting weird, or he's on PCP. Like, there's always something you go, like, every fucking shooting, it's like, really? Like, come on, that guy's a fucking, he's a gangbanger. No, the cop is wrong, but rarely are does it seem the cops are shooting honor roll students. That, with the exception of that one fucking case where the black guy laid on top of the autistic kid to stop him from getting shot, and they kept shooting as he said don't, and he survived. And I was like, wait, there you go. The guy's saving an autistic, like a retard, from a cop. He said, this is the most heroic thing in the world. And everybody's just like, all right, let's move on. Because like, there's no controversy.
Like, there's nothing to argue about. People want to argue about the little facts. And that one, everybody's like, oh, the cop fucked up. Everybody's like, the cop fucked up. The cop's like, yeah, he fucked up. And, but we also know that he wasn't, like, malicious, because I don't think anybody thinks that cops are going out there shooting retards for fun. And we're always like, oh, that was really fucked up. And the guy probably got a couple million bucks, and life moved on.
In that same vein, freedom of speech and this racial stuff, ESPN has suspended host Jemele Hill, who we talked about a few weeks back. She's been suspended for 2 weeks due to a second violation of our social media guidelines. Hill previously acknowledged letting her colleagues and company down with an impulsive tweet, ESPN said in a statement. In the aftermath, all employees were reminded of how individual tweets may reflect negatively on ESPN and that such actions would have consequences, hence this decision. Like a month or so ago, she called Trump a white supremacist and buried Trump. Then on Sunday, she took to social media to comment on Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. He had said that any player who disrespects the flag will not play, referencing NFL player protests that take place during the national anthem. Hill said that Jerry Jones also has created a problem for his players, specifically the black ones. If they don't kneel, some will see them as sellouts. She later said, if you strongly reject what Jones said, the key is his advertisers. Don't place the burden squarely on the players. So, essentially, Hill didn't really say anything inflammatory, anything crazy.
But she called for a boycott.
Is that calling for a boycott?
It's not calling for it in the Colin Kaepernick sense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look at this way. Say your top hostess went out to the newspaper.
Yeah.
To the local paper and was like, yeah, our beer vendor, he's a horseshit person. And, you know, the best way to get him to do things would be to not buy his product. You'd be like, what are you, your fucking mind? You can't do that. I think to me, this one's different than the previous tweet. Setting aside that she's already been warned, because she went after a business partner of ESPN. You know, she said, don't support the NFL. She's, you know, it reasonably could be inferred that's what she was saying.
Right, but she didn't even say that. She wrote, if you strongly reject what Jerry Jones said, the key is his advertisers. Right. Don't place the burden squarely on the players.
But didn't she say that she rejects what he says?
If you strongly reject,
it was like a previous
Jerry Jones
tweet before that.
Jerry Jones has created a problem for his players, specifically the black ones. If they don't kneel, some will see them as sellouts.
I mean, to me, look, just because somebody doesn't explicitly say ABC,
I'm with you.
We can all read. We know she's saying. Yeah,
but
got a problem
here's
with
the thing: would you suspend her for that?
That one possibly, because again,
really?
If you're running ESPN, your biggest business partner is the NFL. And you're one of your most, arguably one of your top news anchors just said, hey guys, if you have a problem with the NFL, you should stop supporting them. Like,
how do you define that, though? I mean, she's supposed to be this, like.
You don't have to, because she knows what it is.
No, but I'm just saying, as far as ESPN goes, it's like she covers the NFL. Is she a reporter? Okay, that's what I'm asking. I mean,
they're not reporters.
Right, but they're supposed to voice their opinion on sports, and I mean, they might talk about CTE on ESPN, and the NFL doesn't like that. ESPN is totally beholden to whatever the NFL wants, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
From a business perspective, yeah, it is what it is, and I'll say this: if Jemele Hill really believes in what she's saying, she wouldn't shut up. She'd keep tweeting.
Mm.
You know, you can't. And I would support that. I think that'd be brave. I don't pretend like I would do it, but if you think it's really important, you should be willing to lose your job for it.
Well, just got suspended for it. Somebody else who was in the news today is Mike Ditka. Did you catch his comments?
Yeah.
He's a former Chicago Bears head coach. Didn't do as good in New Orleans, but...
he didn't do a good job here either.
They won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that team should have won four.
It's very hard for a football franchise to win more than one Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, look at it this way. If they had a fucking competent coach, they could have been like the Patriots. Instead, they were one and that's it.
Well, Jim McMahon was the quarterback. I mean,
that defense could have stopped anybody. And they had Walter fucking Payton before he died.
We're doing way more on this national anthem stuff than I want to because I fucking hate it, and to me it's a non-issue, which I've said, but just these Ditka comments got me because they were so stupid. It was awesome. So he's talking about the players kneeling and all that, and he said on this radio show, all of a sudden it's become a big deal about oppression. There's been no oppression in the last 100 years that I know of. Now, maybe I'm not watching it as carefully as other people. I think the opportunity is there for everybody. If you want to work, if you want to try, if you want to put effort into yourself, I think you can accomplish anything. The end I'm okay with.
Yeah, that's fine.
The beginning, the guy's like 77. And he's saying in the last 100 years there's been no oppression in the United States. It's like, do you miss, like, segregation and Jim Crow? And
Or how about this one? 100 years ago, in 1917, and in 1918, and in 1919, women couldn't fucking vote.
I think he's talking about racial.
I'm just saying, in general, women couldn't vote 100 years ago.
I know.
So you think the people in the South in the 1920s were doing okay? What does he have in his fucking mind? The KKK looks bad. If you're talking about a period of time when the KKK looks bad and goes, yeah, it's pretty good. Like, that's not a good time. Now, if you want to say that the oppression today is greatly overblown or you don't think these current players are oppressed, that's fine. Don't bring up this 100-year shit, dude. But come on.
But, like, he was alive for, like, the Civil Rights Movement and Martin Luther King getting assassinated. Like, he's got to know, like, Malcolm X. Like, he was alive. Like, he was in his 20s, 30s when this shit was happening. He was born in the 30s.
He could have had, like, one of those, I don't know. I mean, he could have just looked at it and been like, look, things weren't as bad. Or I don't know what he's saying. He probably just said 100 years didn't really appreciate how much of 100 years he's been around for. He's a moron or something.
Yeah.
He's pretty drunk.
I have a theory. CTE. He's got Alzheimer's. He played football. He's old and he's got a damaged brain.
He's old and drinks a lot of damaged brain and he's probably a racist anyways.
And I'm making excuses for a rich old white man. Somebody's got to these days. He did apologize.
You can make millions doing that.
Saying, I have absolutely seen oppression in society in the last 100 years. The interview was about the NFL and related issues. That's where my head was at.
And that may be, that could be arguable. Like, if he really was only talking about football, while I still think there's, obviously there's been discrimination in the past 100 years, in his time, he's probably looked at him and like, nah, it's been a meritocracy. Because it's always really weird to talk about racism in football. Like, it's just a weird thing to think that a racist would be like, I really hate black people. Let alone a team full of them. Like, why? Who does that? Own a hockey team.
Sometimes money talks.
They're not really racist, are they?
What do you mean?
I feel like if you're a racist, you don't just be like, I hate black people. I can make some money? Fuck it, bring them in. Like,
What? Like, how about every slave owner that ever existed?
They were trying to make, but they were actually like, you know, suppressing the slaves. They weren't paying the slaves millions of dollars.
But they were making money and they were racist.
Right, but they weren't giving the slaves money. They treated them treated them pretty poor.
How many good sports teams can you have, no offense, unless it's hockey, without any black athletes? If you assemble the best white basketball players in the world, you Cleveland. Might make the playoffs.
Yeah, and they call them the Celtics. But it's like, you know, that's the whole point. It's like, I don't think these owners are racist. I think they are just purely driven by greed. I don't think they give a fuck about color
right.
of skin.
Who knows who's racist and who isn't, but
like, it seems like
Mike Ditka came off like he might be a little racist.
And it's one of those, again, it seems kind of weird to think, I'm not saying the man doesn't have his issues. I wouldn't call him a racist. He probably just doesn't think things through. But again, if you're a racist, you're going to really be, like, drawn, not just playing football, but sticking with it, dedicating yourself to it, coaching it, commentating on it. Like, at a certain point, yeah, you're making money, but you're making money being surrounded by people you don't like all day.
Mm.
Like, that's really weird. Like, if you're an anti-Semite, you don't major in economics. You don't say, I hate Jews, I'm going to go work at a bank. Why would you do that? Now, if you hate Mexicans, you don't decide to, I don't know, serve tacos.
You might hire them, though.
Maybe. But you wouldn't, like, be part of a culture that likes them. Football culture, like, black people are part of the football culture. Not like you're exploiting them for some other purpose. Like, the exploitation of them is the thing. You know, you're exploiting slaves, you're getting cotton out of it. Exploiting football players, you're not getting cotton or anything. Just get to watch them hit each other. Maybe they hate black people. That's what I should stop.
Another person who should have stopped sooner is a guy named Laverne Doran.
Oh.
He is a Baltimore man. We've had a lot of Baltimore stories the last few weeks. He became irate when he says a bottle was thrown at his vehicle from a school bus. The man, who was 68, jumped out of his vehicle and started banging on the door of the bus. When the driver wouldn't open it, Doran walked to the front of the bus and climbed on the hood just as the bus started to move. The driver said he was concerned for his safety and the safety of the students on board the bus. Luckily, an off-duty police officer was nearby and able to intervene quickly. Doran was arrested. He faces several charges, including disorderly conduct and destruction of property. Police are also looking into whether something was actually thrown at his vehicle from the bus. So basically, this old guy, who actually used to be a special ed teacher, 68 years old, had something thrown at his car, like a bottle, and it hit his windshield. And he wanted to, like, get into the bus to yell at the kid who threw it, I guess. Bus driver won't let him in, so he tries to get on the hood of the bus. And the best part of this whole thing is there's video of it, because every kid on a bus has a freaking cell phone now. They're filming the guy on the hood of the bus while it's driving down a road, and the guy's slamming on the hood of the bus and pointing at the driver, yelling at him. It's like... I sent it to you.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's in your... it's somewhere on Messenger there. But it's something else. I can actually send it to you right now. I don't... It's like the weirdest case of road rage ever, because it's like he's out of the car and on the hood of the other car.
I really want to judge this guy, but I'm also acutely aware that this could easily be me. Like, I could see myself getting more and more bitter in life, and you're driving along and some fucking asshole kid throws something out at you.
Yeah, but usually, don't you think as you age, you calm down a little bit?
Not everybody. Some people just get more and more angry. Like, I can feel building in me as I get older. Just like the resentment and the bitterness. And one day it just brings out of you, and you're just like, you fucking piece of shit kid. Like, really? Like, you're just going to be disrespected by a punk kid? Like, everything you have in life, and this is the final indignity. It's like, fuck you, man. Like, I yelled at some kids the other day. I yell at kids a lot these days. They're fucking assholes. Like, I was trying to, like, I'm going to turn into my, the side street I live on. So I'm on the major, like, a regular road there, four lane, not highway. I'm going to turn right, and these fucking kids just walk across the street in front of me. They don't even look. They don't even acknowledge my existence. They're just walking to go to the high school, and they're just like talking to each other, and they're just meandering as slow as they can, and I'm just like, are you out of your fucking mind? I'm in the middle of the street here, and you assholes are just lollygagging. So as I drove by, I honked and go, hey, get out of the fucking road, asshole.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds like you really chose your words wisely.
Kids are dicks. I was a dick when I was a kid, so I know exactly what they're like.
Oh, God, that is quite the image. So, yeah, I sent you the video, but, the guy's very angry for a bottle being thrown. It's just like, I could see flicking the bus off, but, like, banging on the door and hopping on the hood, it's a little much.
I'm not saying it's a reasonable response. I'm just saying I can understand how someone gets to the point where that one just sets them off. I have something about that's very relatable. I find myself more and more these days, like, I don't want to say relating to these crazy people, but it's like, yeah, like, Like, I was thinking about this when people judging, like, all the shit that happened with the hurricanes, and they kept talking about Katrina and the racism. Like, they showed the black people looting and all this. And I was watching that, and I'm going, why do people judge that? I would totally loot if I thought I'd get away with it. Like, 100%. I wouldn't even think twice about it. If I was walking down the street and I knew I could just grab a new fucking TV and I wouldn't get caught, and I know in my mind I could just say, well, they're going to get that paid for by the insurance, fuck yeah, I'm grabbing a new TV. I'm grabbing speakers. I'm grabbing an Xbox. I don't even want video games. I'm just grabbing shit because it's free. So why not? Everybody would take stuff like that, and we all just sit there and go, oh, I wouldn't do that. I'm better than that. No, we're not. I know nobody is better than that because everybody was a Nazi and everybody's apparently rapes women. All the scum.
You're talking about old Weinstein there?
Him and Hitler, yeah. Did I tell you my theory on how I figured out how Donald Trump got through life?
I don't know if you have, no.
My brother and I figured this out on Sunday. I'm convinced I've cracked the code. Donald Trump has gotten through his life by doing one thing. He just says, come on. It's like, we can get this deal done, right? Come on. You can give a little bit of that. Come on. You want to do this? You want to build a building? Don't you? Come on, baby. You want to take your pants off? Come on. And you just always just keep saying, come on, come on, until he gets what he wants. Like, somebody's like, he's like, I can be president. But his entire campaign was, come on, I can do it. Come on. What do I got to? Come on. Just give me a shot. And he did it. He's president of the United States because he effectively said, come on, let's try it. And it just kind of makes you feel good about it. Like, come on. Like, you're in charge. You're adventurous by giving him what he wants. That's Donald Trump. He just says, come on.
Yeah.
Now he's president. We're all going to die. Or we're not. Because I keep remembering, everybody's like, this isn't how you do things. But it's like, well, he's doing it. Like, he's doing it. People, they can't do that. He's like, well, I just did. He's just saying to the world, come on. They're going to Kim. You're not going to fire those nukes, are you? Come on. We know you're not going to really do it. Like, that's what he's saying. We know you're not going to really do it. Come on. Let's just be reasonable here. Come on. And we'll see if Kim responds. He's 33. And he's got a bunch of nukes. It's kind of like if I had a bunch of nukes.
You two do have similar profiles. A night shift manager at a Bronx McDonald's was dishing up more than burgers and fries. He was busted for offering a side of cocaine in his Happy Meals. Authorities caught Frank Guerrero, 26, red-handed during a three-month undercover investigation dubbed Operation Off the Menu. The conduct was so blatant it would be comical if he weren't committing a serious narcotics crime. Special Narcotics Prosecutor Bridget G. Brennan said, ordering coke took on an entirely different meaning on the night shift at this McDonald's. Guerrero allegedly sold cops $10,900 worth of cocaine in 8 separate sales out of the franchise at 1600 Bruckner Boulevard in Soundview section of Bronx. My question is, why did the cops have to do 8 different sales for $10,900? Like, isn't one enough?
I could see maybe needing 2 or 3. You could have like 8. That's kind of like a, all 13 guys in the precinct had to check to see if that stripper was really a stripper. They just had to be really sure. All the guys looked her over. All of them had to make sure that she took money for sex. They're just being thorough. It's possible that, yeah, I have no idea. I have no clue where you get to 8.
Well, there's more.
Maybe they wanted to get him over $10,000. I don't know.
Guerrero allowed his drug customers to enter the main restaurant as well. In one sale to an undercover at the counter, he allegedly concealed cocaine in a cookie bag, which he placed inside a larger McDonald's order of 2 cheeseburgers, a soda, and fries, authorities said. Other employees were milling about nearby. On another occasion, Guerrero allegedly took a break from flipping burgers to sell $6,200 worth of coke to an undercover inside the fast food chain's public bathroom. He allegedly stashed the drugs inside the restroom soap dispenser earlier that day. The undercover cop then sat at a booth and ate a McDonald's meal personally delivered by Guerrero. Five other sales were conducted in the McDonald's parking lot. Authorities executed a search warrant on his home, where they found 200 grams of cocaine and another 5,300 in cash. His girlfriend and 2-year-old child were inside the apartment at the time.
I wonder what's worse for you, the cocaine or McDonald's?
It keeps you up and you can just keep eating it. It's great.
It is a bit of a vicious cycle there, isn't it? That's a little snake eating the tail. Also, the 5 sales in the parking lot. Like, you already got them in the bathroom. You got it when he delivered it to you before you ate your meal. You got it at the drive-thru. And then, like, yeah, let's go to 5 of them in the parking lot where kids can see us.
It's crazy.
Was this all in one day? I picture this also all in one day. I'm sure it wasn't, because a lot of cocaine to carry with you.
Yeah, it does mention that. But it's even more interesting, like, how many sales did he have, like, prior to them catching on? Like, he must have sold, like, hundreds of thousands. He must have sold hundreds of thousands of dollars of coke out of this McDonald's. It's pretty crazy.
That's kind of what I was wondering. You're talking about, like, at some point, what's he still doing there? You know, like, he's probably just a moron. He's got a couple... Like, seriously, like, how many tens of thousands of dollars are you going to launder through McDonald's before you're like, yeah, I don't have to flip the fucking burgers anymore. I can just sit on the stoop. Like,
yeah.
What's the point of this? All you're doing is put yourself in a position where you can't get away, and you're on camera all the time. Then again, this guy is selling coke, and I shouldn't say just selling coke makes you stupid. A lot of smart people sold coke. We just don't know about them.
Another move McDonald's is making, which may or may not be smart, is they are working on a...
I know this.
Yeah, I knew this would upset you. A vegan burger. I think it's being released in Europe first.
The Netherlands. And then
it may... That's part of Europe, right?
Last I checked, yeah.
Ah! Finland.
Fuck!
Finland.
Same thing. Same fucking thing. I don't even know why we have Finland. Why does Finland exist? Why do Finland, Norway, and Sweden all need to be different countries with different languages?
Is Finland the one that Russia shouldn't fuck with or something? Finland was good at, like, fighting in the cold, I remember.
Yeah. I don't know why it has to be its own country. Like, are the Norwegians and the Finns all that different?
Trinidad and Tobago is a country.
At least it's an island.
Okay.
Like, you know, they're in the middle of nowhere. It's like, hey, this is our. We're part of this group of people. The Norwegians and Swedes in particular, they're the same. They're right next to each other, and they look the same. They eat the same food, and they worship the same god. But somehow these assholes decided they need completely different languages. Europe is filled with this bullshit. This is the most racist continent in the whole world. Like, every 13 feet, somebody's got to have a whole new language, a whole new way of making alcohol, a whole new kind of government, a whole new look. Like, what is wrong with you people? Like, I don't go to Wisconsin and have to learn a new fucking language, dickheads, because we're not racist in America against Wisconsinites.
McDonald's has debuted a 100% vegetable-based hamburger called the McVegan, but there's a catch. It's not only just only available in Finland. It's only available in Tampere, Finland, for now at least.
Of course, I mean, that's the vegan capital of Finland.
The burger, which is made with a soy-based patty and a vegan McFeast sauce, will be offered from October 4th through November 21st, according to Today. Many people in Finland have started posting their reactions to the burger on social media, and the majority of the responses have been positive.
Gay.
Did you say okay or did you say gay?
I said gay.
Okay. One user on, I don't know if this is Twitter, said, after boycotting McDonald's for 20-plus years, I had to try the new McVegan. So this is bringing in a lot of new business, wow. I guess. One person in Finland. What else can I tell you about it?
Boycotting McDonald's. Just, like, eating on accident sometimes.
Yeah, I think more people than you would think. Like, healthy people who care about themselves.
I can just see you're not going to eat there, but to boycott it.
Well, what's the difference?
To me, a boycott means I would like to do this, but I'm stopping for a reason. Like, you know, I want them to change how they do something. I'm sure. Hoping to affect their business. Whereas, if you just don't think it's very good or healthy, well, it's not like you're telling McDonald's, until you make this healthier, I won't eat here. Just like, all right, that's your food. I'm not going to eat it.
Right.
Especially when you're like, also, and then you're like, oh, my protest is over. Why? They have a vegan hamburger. Oh, the McVegan got you in? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, how do they even trust these people that this is real? Like, why would anyone trust that this is actually vegan? That, again, I don't know why anyone assumes that their meat's actually meat. I think we're all just eating the same thing.
You would get sued, probably, if it comes out that you were selling something as vegan and it's not.
Well, given that in New York they're selling you cocaine, I'm guessing the quality control back there isn't always that great.
Yeah, but from a factory, if it's vegan, it's vegan. The one thing I was thinking is weird is, like, McDonald's is, like, that's, picture this. If every single McDonald's, like, in the United States, the thousands of them, had to carry this vegan burger, that's like, they have to, like, redesign every kitchen because it can't, like, touch anything.
That's what I'm thinking.
Know what I mean?
Like, there's no way.
Like, they got to have a separate, I mean, I don't even know if they use a griddle or how they even flip a burger at McDonald's. They probably just nuke them. But, like, you can't cross anything, you know?
People probably just have to accept that, look, it's a vegan hamburger. It's not like it's kosher where, like, somebody's going to, like, go to hell if they eat it. Like, I'm guessing you guys have a grill, and I don't know what the fuck you grill that's vegan anyways, but if you add something, like, somebody's like, I'm going to have that. Like, what, do you have any vegan dishes? Like, try this salad. You're probably not going to be like, all right, guys, use the forks that never touch any meat for the salad. We got a salad over here for a vegan. Got to isolate them like they're fucking allergic to peanuts here.
Yeah. Vegans are tough, man.
Do restaurants use peanuts?
You know who does use peanut oil is Five Guys. That's part of the reason they have all those peanuts all over the store.
I'm just wondering. I'm like, I know, like, airplanes don't do that shit anymore, and I'm wondering, like, one of restaurants, because that's an ingredient, but I don't know of any dishes that have big peanut in it.
A lot of times they'll use like that peanut dipping sauce in Asian places.
Oh yeah, that's true.
I mean peanut butter, but that would be more like something in a dessert probably. If you're gonna do something,
I don't really remember eating peanut butter too much at a restaurant. I mean,
because you're associated with, like, peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
But you could have something like a chocolate cake with some kind of peanut butter frosting or something like that.
We don't really use peanut butter for dinner.
Yeah. I mean, peanut oil. Yeah. Peanut oil has a higher, like, smoke point, so you can fry at a higher temp than traditional, like, vegetable oil or canola. That's why Five Guys uses it. They think you can get a better French fry that way, or crispier fry, or whatever. They do all their fries fresh. It's not like 99% of restaurants have frozen fries, and you wouldn't know the difference. Like, McDonald's isn't cutting potatoes and making fresh fries.
What the fuck is Five Guys doing here? Like, your fast food French fries, guys. Let's not overthink this.
But that they've made billions of dollars doing it. You know what I mean? That was kind of like one of their trademarks that set them apart, was that they were doing fresh fries. Whether or not that makes a difference remains to be seen,
so
but it worked
somebody
for them.
At all of those restaurants, as they go through and, like, cut the French fries or whatever from, like, a potato?
Yeah, if you go, I think they do, because they've got the bags of the potatoes there. I think they have a machine that does it, but they would cut them and do them fresh there, and they like fry them twice. You get them started at a lower temp, you finish them at a higher temp. It's like a whole thing. Like, you know, if you ever go to the fair, like, the fries are different. You can taste the difference, not even taste, but the mouthfeel is different between a frozen fry and a fresh one. It just is. Like, I don't care, but some people might. But
as long as it's got grease and salt on it.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. Like, I know McDonald's years ago got in trouble by,
beef sauce they were cooking shit in or whatever.
They were doing fries, and it was, like, in beef tallow or something, which is, like, it gave it more flavor. But they didn't really tell anybody, so I don't know if Muslims, somebody, like, sued them, because it was like...
All I know is that whomever it was, whichever group, I guarantee I will think, fuck you. It's either Muslims, Jews, or vegetarians.
Yeah, somebody who doesn't like beef.
America. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that's our McDonald's stories for the week. Moving along. This story caught my eye. In Cleveland, a woman accused of pulling a gun on a barber because he was taking too long to cut her 7-year-old son's hair has been sentenced to 6 months behind bars. 31-year-old Andrea Smith was sentenced Tuesday. She previously pleaded guilty to menacing, child endangering, and carrying a concealed weapon. Smith apologized at sentencing and acknowledged she briefly pulled a handgun from her purse at a barber school in April and that she had no license to carry the weapon, but she denied waving it or threatening the barber, as police alleged. No one was hurt. Police say Smith put away the gun after another employee helped to calm her down. The barber finished the haircut, and then Smith left with her children.
Wow, props for the barber for finishing the haircut. Jesus. That takes some courage there. I guess she doesn't really have a lot of pressure, a lot of choice, but, I mean, what's the point of even giving her 6 months? Like, seriously, is she going to actually change? It's a grown woman that pulled a gun on a barber because her kid's haircut took too long. This woman's going back to jail again. Might as well just lock her up for good now.
Hey, being a mom is tough.
Yeah, your wife pulled a lot of guns on people because your kid's haircut took an extra 10 minutes. It's a haircut for a boy. How long could it possibly take?
My son takes a while because his hair is so curly.
But again, don't we talk? I don't know. When you said that, I'm like, is that real? I'm like, do you have to like pull like each hair and cut them individually? I don't know. Then I'm like, couldn't they just get it wet and it would straighten out?
He doesn't like when they squirt him with that spray bottle.
But I mean, I've had haircuts in my life, and they don't take that long. We're talking 10 minutes here, maybe 15, 20 at tops.
Yeah.
And I know black people barbershops take longer. I'm assuming this is a black person because it's Cleveland and a bar. Honestly, I don't know.
Andrea Smith is her name.
Yeah, I initially just thought black person, well, probably because of the crime, but also just the barber thing. Like, black people hang out at the barbershops. That's what I'm thinking. Well, maybe she's like hung up. Maybe she's tired of like the barbershop culture of just taking too long.
Let me see if I can find a picture of her. Ooh, oh shit! There's video, I think, or something.
Oh,
hang on.
Yeah.
I didn't have the video. I just found it.
I like how what we're more likely is going to happen is my racist assumption is going to be proven correct, which is never a good thing.
Should we just leave people hanging?
No, I assume she's.
Goddamn commercials. Hang on. I've got this commercial playing in my ear. Hang on. Damn it. Now I gotta watch the news story.
Okay. It's just math that's the problem here. You know, math is racist.
She's black. She's black, and there's a video of her pulling the gun out. Fuck.
I should not feel pride in myself right now. Not at all. I should still feel shame for what I've done.
I just pictured a really tired and stressed out mom. I didn't see color. I'm like Tommy Lahren. I don't see color.
Does she see color?
She said in something with the Daily Show guy that she doesn't see color.
Oh.
She took some shit for that.
I hope somebody pushed her on the fucking stairs.
That's
like metal stairs. They're cold. That's the last thing she feels in life is cold rivets of a studded steel step.
This is a story I think we'll both enjoy. Me because it's restaurant related, and you because it involves a bomb threat. A Pittsburgh man has been arrested after police say he called in a false bomb threat to try and get out of paying his restaurant bill. 40-year-old Barry Clapperton faces charges that could include threats to use weapons of mass destruction, public drunkenness, and false identification to police. A witness says Clapperton tried to leave multiple times without paying for his meal at Primanti Brothers. Police were called to the scene, and another person paid for Clapperton's bill. Police say they were about to let the man leave when the bomb threat was called into a nearby restaurant. Authorities say they used a stun gun to subdue Clapperton after he ran from the restaurant. Police say Clapperton acknowledged he called him the false threat to create a distraction.
Well, that's a... He didn't do a very... How do you fuck that up? Just call him and say there's a bomb. Remember, like, let's get out.
Okay. Let's back up.
You just don't run too early.
Why do you go out to eat and not have the money?
Well, he's drunk. They established that.
He showed up drunk, or was he drinking there?
I'm guessing he showed up drunk.
Okay, so you had to buy something to drink before. You got drunk somehow. You had some money. Then you go into a restaurant, start eating and drinking more with no way to pay. And instead of, I don't know what you do in that situation. Like, in my, let's see, I started working in restaurants when I was 15. In my 22 years of working in restaurants, like, usually I feel like if people don't have the money to pay, which I can't even really remember encountering, you just walk out. Or you walk towards the bathroom and you sneak out the front door and nobody notices.
That's what I was thinking.
You don't call in a bomb threat.
Well, first of all, if you're somebody that calls in bomb threats to get out of bills, which is probably like $20, I'm guessing the rest of your decision-making prowess isn't all that great. But yeah, I don't know how, why don't you just walk out the door? Who's going to stop you? It's not going to look weird. I think about that all the time. Whenever I go to the grocery store, I'm like, I can just walk out with shit. No one's going to stop you.
They might notice, though, but because you're walking out with a shopping cart full of stuff.
Well, maybe not a shopping cart full, but like if you just grab something in your hand, you just walk out. Nobody's going to, because nobody's going to think, you. Nobody thinks you, anybody's that blatant. It's like, I feel like
if you walk out with something that's not in a bag nowadays, there's, somebody's going to stop you. But
maybe.
That's me.
But like, I know this person who's, they're divorced and they got a kid and the dad took the kid to a movie theater and the 5-year-old kid left the kid in the theater for a couple minutes to run out and get his cell phone from his car. We're talking a real fucking winner here. And like somebody in the theater had to come and sit with the kid and the kid was crying and all this. But I'm like, when I heard this story, I thought, if you were a pedophile and you saw this happen, you wouldn't go after that kid because it's so blatantly stupid. It looks like a setup. Like, no pedophile's ever shown up to the movie theater to see Cars 3, seeing a kid all by themselves. I mean, that would just be heaven. They'd be like, no, it's never this easy. This is the same thing. Some things are too easy.
Yeah, it's just odd. Or if you're the guy, you call somebody, you call a friend, like, You get somebody's credit card number and they give it to you over the phone. There's like ways out of it. Like, there's been situations where people's credit cards have been denied and they get a, someone stays and they go get another card, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You don't call in a bomb threat. Like, it's just such a drastic move.
Again, when you can just walk. Like, that's really like, you're going through a lot of extra work when the easiest solution is simply just get up and walk away, and nobody's going to know. How many people eat all the time and leave the table to go to the bathroom? Duh, that's why they have bathrooms in restaurants, so you can use them or sell drugs, and just get out and leave. This isn't really very difficult. You have to call him a bomb. Look, you had to get up and walk away to call him a bomb threat. All you have to do is walk a couple more feet out the door.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't too drunk to call 911 and tell him where the bomb was. Speaking of your, I don't know if it was your friend or the acquaintance who left his kid in the movie theater, but this is a good fall story. Pro tip for families, this is from USA Today, by the way. Pro tip for families planning to visit a corn maze this fall. Doesn't count as solving the maze if your children don't make it out with you. One family failed to heed that advice and left a 3-year-old boy behind at the crazy corn maze in the Salt Lake City suburb of West Jordan, Utah, Monday night. The mother failed to notice her son was missing until the next morning. An unrelated guest found the boy near the maze entrance at about 7:30 p.m. He was crying and upset and obviously scared. We couldn't get him to give us his name. He could say his brother's name and his cat's name, but not his own name. An off-duty police officer let the boy watch a movie on a laptop in her patrol car while staff members walked through the maze with a bullhorn trying to find the parents. When they couldn't find his family, they waited for someone to return for the boy. Closing time came and went, but no one ever arrived. The Utah Division of Child and Family Services kept the boy overnight. The child's mother woke up Tuesday morning and finally noticed he was missing.
No mention of drugs or alcohol.
She realized she may have left him at the corn maze and called us, Sergeant Joe Monson told the Salt Lake Tribune. Monson said the mother arrived at the police station with about 10 children. This was a case
okay.
of...
Okay. We're getting a bit more of a picture here. Things are making a little more sense.
This was a case of multiple families with multiple children living in the same home.
Okay. Sadly, the humor is dissipating. All right. This is probably just one of those things where...
There was nothing funny about this because, like, I picture a three-year-old without his family,
really,
and they
awful.
Abandoned him, and he can't find them anywhere, and he's at some weird fucking field in the middle of Utah where he's never been before at some shitty farm corn maze.
Wait, it's like Utah, multiple families living in the same home?
It's Big Love.
That's exactly what this is. And they probably were just hoping they would leave. When you have so many kids, you don't know when one of them is missing.
That is almost like an episode of Big Love. Like, one of the mothers, like, had to take all the kids out while one of them was doing their job and trying to sell shit, and they forgot one of the kids. Like, that's legit right out of Big Love.
So there we go. Life imitates art.
Yes, in this case. And lastly, I have a local story. I always like to do those. So this is actually Martha's Vineyard, the vacation home of Obama and Clinton over the years. A Florida psychic on Thursday agreed to repay $3.5 million to an elderly Martha's Vineyard woman for repeated exorcisms. After the psychic admitted to evading taxes, prosecutors said, Sally Ann Johnson, 41, pleaded guilty in federal court in Boston to interfering with tax laws. She will be sentenced in January and faces up to 3 years in prison. From 2007 to 2014, the Martha's Vineyard woman paid Johnson more than $3.5 million to, quote, purportedly performed spiritual cleansing and healing services to rid the woman of demons through repeated exorcisms.
I gotta move to Martha's Vineyard.
They do have lighthouses.
I mean, that's amazing. That's a lot of money to scam from someone.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't a scam. Maybe she really is taken over by demons.
Well.
It seems unlikely, I admit.
I'd be more upset that it seems like she's not very good at her job. You know, if the seventh time or whatever, eventually, you know, if you went to your doctor, like, doc, I got a pain in my throat, and it took him seven tries, after like three or four times, you'd be like, oh, okay, I think I should see a different doctor here. You're not very good at this. You just keep cutting off arms and things. Like, you're not doing a good job.
Right.
So, yeah, sounds like it's just she didn't pay the taxes on it, but really, this sounds like religious work, and, you know, charities are tax-exempt. This one was really a charitable organization.
You should defend her. Johnson used...
Go ahead.
I have more information. Johnson used an alias and directed the woman to send payments to at least three different bank accounts with which Johnson was associated, including an account in another person's name. Johnson then withdrew large portions of the woman's payments from the accounts in cash. In addition, Johnson accrued substantial charges on a credit card held in the name of the elderly woman, who ultimately paid the credit card bills, thereby concealing from the IRS the true extent of Johnson's income. Neither Johnson nor any of the businesses she operated filed a tax return or paid taxes on the income she received from the woman. Johnson owned several businesses, including the Flatiron Psychic, Psychic Match, Inc., and Psychic Spiritual Salon, Inc. She offered psychic readings, spiritual cleansing and strengthening, and meditation and healing. Johnson had several aliases, including Angela Johnson, Angelia Johnson, and Sally Reed.
Well, you've got to have more than one. You never know who's out there in the astral plane coming after you.
Mm. Although, I thought about this just the other day, in a weird enough way, actually. I realized that in the Bible, there's all kinds of rules you're supposed to do, right? Like, in the Old Testament, and I think the Muslims have it too, like, they have, like, rules. Like, supposedly God came down, he's like, look, you're not allowed to cook a calf in its mother's milk. Like, you can't eat beef and drink milk at the same time. I'm not really sure. It's a fucking rule. So, presumably, they had a rule to tell you how to eat. They had rules telling you where you could shit, who you could marry, how you should raise kids. They have all these rules. Rules on how to pray. You know what there's not a single actual instruction for in the Bible? How to perform an exorcism. How did they leave that one out? You think that when the whole thing is like, hey, watch out for the devil, Jesus or somebody couldn't have been like, all right, in the event of an exorcism, you're possessed by a demon, here's what you do. No, everybody's just making it up. And that's why this psychic was able to get away with it.
$3 million.
It's a steal if it's really the devil you're getting out, though. It's
fucking crazy.
That's a fuck ton of money.
Who is this lady?
That's what I'm wondering. It's like, this is actually the saddest thing of all of this, is that if it wasn't for the tax fraud, she'd have gotten away with it. Think about like, whenever people wonder about, why do we have, like, the police and shit investigating the shooting in Vegas? We should just have the IRS do it. They never miss anything. They caught Al Capone, all right? Like, that's what they do. They're perfect.
Yeah, as far as we know. Yeah, that story was just so crazy because you picture like The Exorcist and like a weird priest and somebody's head spinning around and green puke coming out. And
I learned more about how to perform an exorcism from The Exorcist than I did from the Bible. Like if somebody's like, this person's possessed, what do? I'd be like, spray some water on them, say the power of Christ compels you. I don't know if that actually works because nobody wrote it down. There's a real, real big oversight here. Like, when, like, your main enemy has, like, one trick up his sleeve, which is all he'll possess you, and nobody tells you how to fight that one, that's kind of bullshit. It's like if you went into a fight and nobody taught you how to block a punch, and your opponent was a boxer. I can hear the crickets in the background.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
I was, before we started, I was trying to find it. I'm in the basement, and I can't find it.
I love it. I love the sounds of nature.
Every once in a while, like this time of year in the fall, they'll get down here, and you can find them, but I cannot find that one. And when I've been talking, it usually quiets down. I was going to throw something in that direction to shut it up, but I didn't know if you could hear it. And I also thought it was funny if, like, I'd let you finish that, and the only thing you could hear was crickets. Thought that was a nice touch.
It was good. No, with me, it's important to let the crickets play after I stop talking.
On that note, anything else going on in half-guarded land?
Let's see. No.
Nothing.
No.
Like, this is where you're supposed to, like, plug something. You always fuck it up.
Yeah, I don't have anything to plug. If I do, it'll be up on the site.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening to MMA and Stuff on halfguarded.com. We appreciate you, listener, and we will talk to you next week.
I'm finished.